Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, here it is Friday, and I guess it's time we had a little talk with the West Virginia Coal Association, because I can report that coal don't keep the lights on. No, not even. No, when last we met, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, easily accessed across the interweb tubes on a variety of platforms, most notably... by simply going to headonradionetwork.com and clicking Listen Live, and it'll get you right to the stream. The stream address is also over at whiterosesociety.org. And on your mobile devices, we're easily found at places like TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio app, Stitcher, Dar.fm if you want to record the show for later listening, that kind of thing. The podcasting address is, of course, at whiterosesociety.org, and you can also get the podcasts via iTunes. Okie dokie. Stitcher also runs the rerun from the previous day as well. Yes, Waggy, it is Friday. And I've been some sort of a limbo land between when we signed off on Monday and the beginning of the program now. This should be Tuesday. But, I don't know, somebody got Sherman all liquored up and the Wayback Machine's just cooked. And so here we are. It is Friday. It's the second day of November, 2012. The 30th and 31st of October, as well as the 1st of November, passed in imposed silence as a result of the blizzard, the Sandy Blizzard, which just sounds kind of icky to begin with. And was the Sandy Blizzard that struck in the wee early morning hours of October the 30th. I signed off at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Monday night, hoping to talk to you all by Tuesday evening at the regular time, but because, you see, there's this thing called climate change, and it's making bad matters worse. And it made bad matters worse here. 4 months to the day after the land hurricane that we were taught to refer to as a derecho struck Appalachia, we got whacked again. When the derecho struck us, it was 100 degrees outside. When the Sandy Blizzard hit, well, temperatures were going in the opposite direction, let's just say that. So now much of the snow is going away, although some of it is still here. We got about 2 feet of the stuff here at about, 1,500 feet elevation. Much more in higher elevations. And it crippled us. But we were able to get through and get by. And we did so thanks to you. Thanks to you and the Truth Seekers who helped us get a generator going during the derecho. We were able to fire it up, keep the place warm, just no interweb tubes. Because when the power goes out, cable modem, even if you had power to it via a generator, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference. And we don't have quite the bandwidth here on the cell phone wireless internet yet to be able to stream a show. No. Those are lessons that were hard learned during the aforesaid derecho. So it turns out that after the, you don't want to hear me say that word again, do you? No, I don't want to say it. Yeah, I do. After the derecho, the fine folks at Appalachian coal-fired 19th century technology power basically put the grid back together with spit and baling wire. It didn't hold up so good in 2 feet of really wet snow. I mean, we sat here and just listened to trees going crack, you know, whole trees. By the time we decided to venture out in search of gasoline for said generator, there were trees down all over. But I feel a little bit awful even talking about what happened here, because it cannot begin to compare with what happened, especially in New Jersey and New York City. Words fail, except to ask, does this country have the national will to make sure that we can help New York, New Jersey, and all the other affected areas of the East Coast recover from it? The sad fact of the matter is, we will know the answer to that question, well, we'll know it on Tuesday, or maybe Wednesday, or depending on how the electronic voting machines hold up, a month from Wednesday. You know what I mean? You've been reading the stories. You've probably been reading far more of them than have I. There's lots and lots and lots of problems. And this is not conspiracy theory. This isn't the messages that come in through the fillings in your teeth. These machines are junk. And they're in place for only one purpose. No, not necessarily to steal the vote. They were put in place because the companies that make them, these video game voting machines, are great big corporations. And great big corporations usually have Republican client representatives. They're in place as a result of the so-called Help America Vote Act that happened after the 2000 election, when the solution to the problem was seen to be a matter of simply putting in place something more complicated than the thing that had broken down in the first place, but also much more expensive, which provided a means of taking the commons, i.e. the tax dollars of, you know, we, the people, and pumping it into said corporation's pockets, who in return conveniently provided a system that could not be guaranteed to protect the franchise for anybody who happened to play and or slash vote on one. I hope we can overcome it. What little bit of my being is left that is comprised of faith wants to believe we can overcome it. Because otherwise, well, I'll say it again. This Tuesday, the 6th of November, is not an election. It is, more properly understood, as an IQ test.
The Romney-Ryan administration has activated the emergency private sector alert system. This is not a test. This alert applies to the entire eastern seaboard and inland northeast. Due to necessary and moral cuts to the National Weather Service, we were notified of an impending hurricane after it made landfall at Trump's Casino in Atlantic City. The storm is producing rain, wind, and storm surge that is in no way related to science or global warming. These things happen. Residents are urged to climb on their rooftops and await state funding. Better still, await assistance from
Alpha Natural Resources,
which will be arriving soon. You can further prepare and ride out the storm by reading Ayn Rand's Guide to Disaster Assistance and Squirrel Cuisine. Residents of the affected areas are urged to avoid contact with other residents, lest they band together in a socialist collective. Most importantly, do not panic. With flourishing upper-income tax cuts, job creators will be there to assist you shortly. Activating the emergency private sector alert system ensures that spending reduction remains uninterrupted throughout the disaster, be it flood, fire, earthquake, drought, or depression. Stay tuned to this station for updates on the wonders of the unfettered free market. This has been a message from the emergency private sector alert system. This is not a test.
Yeah, that beautiful piece of audio comes courtesy of Mark Fiore. Mark Fiore, MarkFiore.com. You can find it over at MotherJones.com. Watch the Romney Ryan Emergency Private Sector Alert System. I mean, it's funny, but it's also true. And it will be true if we get up Wednesday morning next saying, or trying to get used to say, President Romney. Yep, Isaac, live now. We are live. Yes, we are live. This is a live broadcast on the Horn, headonradionetwork.com. And I want to offer up thanks. You know, it was just a week or so ago that our buddy Tom in California wrote something about revamping the fundraising system here, the contribution system, and how much we look to raise on any given show night. He suggested $150 a night we try to raise. And he mentioned the fact that we should try to build up a little bit of a cushion. And we had built up a little bit of a cushion between the end of September and the end of October. And thanks be to you for it. Because we got through this. Thanks to you. Because when it came right down to it, a $50 to $75 a day gasoline habit is not easy to maintain. It would be easier to have a crack or meth or even probably heroin habit. But it made sure the lights stayed on, the rooms stayed warm, and bellies stayed full. Well, the bellies were taken care of, but you get the idea. So thank you. And we will work on that. We will work on that cushion, Tom. And we will move the needle as you suggested. So from all of us, our sincere thanks, going all the way back to last summer. Now, where to go? I have sat around Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, almost at the point of talking to myself and replying. The talking to yourself part, you can deal with that after a while, or for a while. But it's when you start answering yourself that the trouble comes. At one point, I was practically doing a show, just sitting there with the cell phone internet trying to it was pitiful. Agnes said, Bob, we really need to get the power back on because I think you're slipping a little. And I may have been, but it's awfully good to be back. It's awfully good to be talking again, and this is Friday on the Front Porch, so we will let the conversation go in that direction. A couple of questions still out there. And maybe they're being answered. It would seem that we are beginning to try to have a little bit of a conversation about climate change. Now, for all the other goofy stuff that I've disagreed with him on, and pernicious stuff, I give credit where credit is due, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York got it right when he issued his endorsement of Barack Obama yesterday and did so primarily mentioning climate change. He mentioned some other issues as well, things like marriage equity and some degree of a semblance of sanity about firearms, although, you know, bears remembering that the only firearm law that has been put in place in the last 4 years is the one that allows goobers to carry their blue steel penis extensions into national parks, right? But it was the climate change issue that apparently pushed Mayor Bloomberg toward his endorsement. And so I was glad to see it, because it is a conversation that needs to be had, regardless of what the horse race trope maintainers of the for-profit media think or attempt to think. It's got to happen. It needed to happen probably 10 to 15 years ago. But to some degree or another, it's got to happen. We need a conversation about coal-fired electricity and about the nature of the grid and about whether this... really, we're talking about a 19th century, early 20th century idea when we talk, you know, with linemen on poles and splicing cable and trees falling across them. In just about everywhere that there are power lines on power poles, if you were to go to the county recorder, clerk, whatever, deed office, you would find that your local power company has a legal right, called an easement, to go just about anywhere they want that their lines run and maintain clearances for their lines to run without being impeded by the local flora. Well, maintaining those rights of way is anything but the case in a place like West Virginia. Power lines run through trees. Trees grow over power lines. And if you had driven around, as I did, and saw all those trees laying on all those power lines, or the power lines snapped and sparking in the roads, I don't know about you, but the first thing that came to my mind is, well, you know how my mind works, right? How much of a monthly ratepayer's bill goes to actual maintenance of the grid infrastructure? How much of it goes to executive salaries and non-executive salaries? How much of it goes to shareholder dividends? We really do need to have real-world, real-time answers to these questions. And we need to talk about the grid. We need to have a serious conversation about the grid. Me, I'll be taking a break here, because it turns out that Monday's show is running on the stream, so I need to get hold of Ben to see if we can do something about that. Stand by, please. Okay, I think I solved that little problem. Hi, everybody. I'm Bob. This is a live program, Friday on the Front Porch. My apologies. I guess I got rusty over the course of those three silent days. It was a faulty nut behind the microphone problem. I didn't throw the third switch. My bad. My apologies. God knows how many people... this is Monday's show. I guess he ain't on. Should we just start the show all over? I was in the middle. I was in about halfway in the middle of some... No, we won't. you can hear the first 21 minutes on the rerun. Or on the podcast, for that matter. Thank you, Waggy. Put the candle back! No, I forgot to hit the send button on the streaming software. If, you see, we had a full staff and a producer and an engineer and an electrician and, a noble lumpkin and things like that, we would have a little protocol that said, don't forget to hit the send button. If I get any more little stickies on the streaming machine monitor, I won't be able to see the screen anymore. But no, look, the program's back. And thank you for all of your kind words and wishes and thoughts over the course of the last several days. We've been okay, and we've been safe, and we've been warm. We've gone on daily quest, hillbilly quest for fire runs for gasoline, sometimes going as far as Beckley, West Virginia, about a 70-mile round trip. Power came on in a little town near us yesterday. Came on for us just a couple of hours before the program began here. It was a matter of getting a little portable propane space heater out here to the studio and warming it up, and then slowly bringing the entire radio broadcast starship system up a little bit at a time. Brother. And all that heartfelt stuff that went into the first 21 minutes we'll be okay. I just can't bring myself to rerun stuff I already ran. So, okay, yeah, now I begin to understand the emails I was getting. Are you live? And Dr. John, rerun on TuneIn app. And Randy, throw the right switches, Bob. And, okay, yeah, now I'm live, Isaac. My bad. So we'll just save a Moran Monday nomination for Bob. Can we do that? Yeah. But here we are at Friday. The election, or IQ test, will come around on Tuesday. You all saw the display of infuriating bipartisanship on the part of Governor Christie and President Obama. Well, I mean, it wasn't infuriating to you. It wasn't infuriating to me. But it was absolutely infuriating to the right wing. I thought poor Flush Flimball was going to have to go off and find a Dominican rent boy just to work out his frustrations. You understood it. I understood it. It is in the nature of us as Americans, and I think in the nature of us as human beings, in the midst of crisis, to find a way to come together and solve the problem. The right wing declared, well, Governor Chris Christie has doomed any chances he ever had at being president. Well, no, I don't think so. I think he just made his chances of being the Republican nominee considerably stronger in 2016, And I've already had a suggestion from one quarter that he may be the Democratic nominee in 2016. Stranger things have indeed happened. But during the silence that has attended the great Snowmageddon blackout here in almost level west by God, Virginia, this little region whose soundtrack is played in a minor key with minor chords, it's been a pain in the ass, but it has been nothing compared to what places like Atlantic City and Rehoboth in Delaware and Rockaway and Queens and Staten Island, especially Staten Island, have gone through. A little victory coming right before showtime. I've been following this story. The Village Voice, for instance, putting out a story about generators sitting in Central Park to run the media tent for the New York Marathon. And that's pretty insensitive. That's pretty insulting. But right before showtime, we learned that, yes, New York can do the right thing. City officials and marathon organizers announced just a little bit before 6 o'clock that the New York City Marathon has been canceled. This will be the first time since 1970 that the marathon has not been run. And that just seems to make sense. It sure did make sense to me. I remember 4 months ago when every resource in this state was marshaled to make sure that a second-tier low-rent PGA event went off down at the 1% Greenbrier Resort, while grannies, literally just scant miles away, went without water, went without air conditioning, went without electricity, any basic services. Well, the generators hummed away to make sure that Toby Keith could sing about putting boots in somebody's ass. So I get it, and I applaud New York officials for coming around to the... I wouldn't want to be a runner running through all that. People might get a little testy and throw something besides water at the passing runners. Yeah. But the crazy has just piled up like the 2 feet of snow did over the course, and you know, credit to the weather meteorology people, they got it right. I kept sitting there thinking, nah, really, 2 feet? Couldn't be. But then we measured it. Yeah, pretty much, pretty close. Ferg was out there with the snow shovel, didn't even have to tell him to do it, bless his heart. Shoveling away. You got the generator going, got out for more fuel. And I said, wait a minute, boy, because the height of the snow shovel was a pretty good indication. I said, stick that into the... And he went, wow. And most of it's gone now. And now we're expecting rain this weekend. Pretty big rain. Problems have only begun in places like Staten Island and the rebuilding process in Rockaway. And even here, you see things like heavy rains and you begin to think about things like the Shoemate Dam and the Brushy Fork impoundment. And you wonder and you worry. Yeah. But there has been no dearth of crazy during the time that I have sat mute. I remember an old short, science fiction short story, sort of science fiction horror story called For I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. That's a little what it felt like. But I was just spoiled by the virtue of the fact that I'm used to us having this conversation every evening. You're crazy all over the place. You want some crazy? Here's some crazy.
I have a major revelation for black Americans. It is a big lie that Democrats are for black Americans and Republicans are against black Americans. Abraham Lincoln, who freed the slaves, was a Republican. Republicans founded the NAACP. Republicans passed the Civil Rights Act while Democrats opposed it. Blacks can gain success and prosperity by voting out Obama and the Democrats and voting in the Republicans.
Empower Citizens Network is responsible for the content of this message.
Like I said, the crazy is spilling out all over the place. Hello, Black America. Vote for Bishop Romney, who comes from a religion that did not acknowledge that people of color were real human beings till 1978, and do so because Lincoln freed the slaves. Really. Whew. That's running in Ohio. Crazy. I think I yelled, I just made animal noises. When I first saw that. There's some things that a human mind ought not be asked to tolerate. We're Republicans. We gave you the Civil Rights Act. Yeah, you want to tell me how many... Let's talk about Mr. Lincoln. Let's talk about those... Republicans who gave us the Civil Rights Act. How many of those Republicans would be welcome in today's teabagging Republican Party? Isaac writing in, I've done seen and heard all now. What's worse is the guy who introduces the Lincoln Freed the Slaves ad. Looks sort of like the grown-up version of the nerdy cousin on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. What was his name? Yeah. Right. Crazy all over the place. Just by way of offering some of it up for discussion, Isaac sent this along to me a couple of days ago. Maybe it was yesterday. Had a real hard time watching anything on the itsy-bitsy cell phone internet bandwidth, but wow, when I did, it wasn't any better. It was straw straight into the liquor bottle, and I don't mean the good stuff either. This is a real live, not kidding, no joke, political ad that is running on behalf of Reverend Brother Pastor Todd Akin, Reverend Brother Pastor Representative Todd Akin, candidate for Senate in Missouri. Now, if you really want to follow the logic of this, it's going to involve huffing industrial solvents. I suggest you don't. Just let your eyes roll back in your head for a minute and then catch your balance and don't stand up.
My name is Kelly Burrell, and I'm a full-time student. I'm a single mother. I'm a woman who's had an abortion. I've been raped in my past.
She's been raped in her past. That hurts. Hurts when you get raped in your past. These idiots can't even put together a language that makes any sense. Is that what they call it now? Jesus.
My name is Kelly Burrell, and I'm a full-time student. I'm a single mother. I'm a woman who's had an abortion. I've been raped in my past.
Notice the attempt at careful use of the language. Notice the way she frames it. I've had an abortion. I've been raped in my past. I think the Reverend Brother Pastor Representative Todd Akinbunch would like you to equate the idea of being raped with having an abortion. That's the rape. In other words, they're still working on a really solid definition of rape out there in Repiglick and land.
My name is Kelly Burrell, and I'm a full-time student. I'm a single mother. I'm a woman who's had an abortion. I've been raped in my past.
Then, and this is the messaging mistake, after she says I've been raped in my past, the first words that appear on the screen are, Todd Akin! Oh, they spend a lot of money on these campaigns. Is there nobody that can tell them that after the word rape, the first words that people see on their screens probably ought not be Todd Akin? Or it... Yeah, Doc. Bob. You do not understand the way that these people's minds operate. What do you mean, Doc? You'll see, they carry so much psychic subconscious baggage that they do not even understand, they cannot comprehend when they are making these howling mistakes. It is all entirely subconscious, and it is a constant source of irony. Play on, Bob. I cannot wait to hear the rest of it. Thanks, Doc.
Reason that I'm voting for Todd and that I'm so proud of him is because he defends the unborn. He's a kind man, a compassionate man. He has so much integrity.
My first 12 years of my life.
Now we get a new woman here, and she's going to connect the dots for us out there in Missouri, where, by the way, in a really cranky, testy video that I found tweeted by Dave Zirin yesterday, Missouri, where in a really cranky, testy video exchange, Bishop Willard Romney, who proudly said, I think I know more about my religion than you do. I've been a bishop. I've been a stake president. All right. Well, I've been a pork chop emperor. No. I know my religion better than you do. Jesus is not coming back to rule in Missouri. Jesus is going to split the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, and then there will be 1,000 years, and then he will rule jointly from Jerusalem and Missouri. Whoop! No, he really said it. I'm not kidding. It's like a 5-minute interview. It's too much to run. But he did. He said it. Jesus will jointly rule for 1,000 years, sort of, I don't know, teleporting back and forth between Branson and Jerusalem. Because they have roughly the same emotional and historical... I mean, could that flim-flam artist Joseph Smith have... I mean, you could at least maybe pick Cahokia, Illinois. It's right across the river from Missouri, for Christ's sakes, and it's got pyramids! Granted, it's not the Great Temple or anything, but it's, I mean, pyramids! Look at pyramids! The biggins! But I think he kind of had a hard-on about Illinois after the whole Nauvoo thing. But anyway, getting back to Representative Pastor Brother Todd, he's going to connect the dots now, because the woman you're going to hear from now is not the first woman who got raped when she had an abortion. This woman has a different story to tell. about how, well, let's let her tell it.
My first 12 years of my life, I grew up in Russia. I've known his family since I got to America for 7 years.
Her name is Zoya. She seems quite earnest and sincere. She's known his family for 7 years. That's the 7 years after she got here from Russia. By the way, speaking of Russia, guess who's in Russia? The bishop's boy, Matt Romney. He had business in Moscow or some such. But while he was doing business over in Russia, he just, you know, popped by the Kremlin to say, just a little howdy, hi, how you doing, how's your daddy, you know, kind of thing with old Pooty Poot. No reports on whether he looked into his soul, like Dim Leader did. But in light of the fact that his daddy, the bishop, had been running around for a few months saying absolutely stark raving, been shooting up the horse tranquilizer crazy crap about Russia, things like Russia is without question our number one geopolitical foe, and they're a geopolitical adversary, right? Well, Matt was over there doing business, and he was just out strolling around Red Square one day, and lo and behold, there was Pooty Poot. Well, it wasn't actually Pooty Poot, it was one of Pooty Poot's buddies. And what he told him was, listen, all that stuff, that geopolitical, our biggest enemy stuff, listen, comrade, he didn't mean none of it. It's just, you know, it's just stuff we tell the rubes at election time because it gets them good and stirred up because, well, we don't hate you, but they do, and we got to have them vote for us. You weren't watching the first debate, were you there, comrade? Well, see, in that first debate, my dad said that me and my four brothers are all a bunch of liars. Well, the fact of the matter is, we come by it honest. The apple don't fall far from the tree. You got apples up here, right, comrade? You know what I mean? Yeah, chestnuts will do. The chestnut don't fall far from the tree either. And if me and my four brothers were a bunch of filthy, stinking liars who couldn't be trusted to tell you if the sun came up at noon, well, if we're that, we come by it honest. We learned it from our dad, the bishop. That man can't ask our mama to bring him the tuna fish casserole without telling about a half a dozen lies. So listen, my dad, when he's talking all that crap on you guys, he's just lying to the American people. He doesn't mean any of it. We're gonna be great friends. No, we're not gonna be toasting you with vodka or anything. I mean, that was a little bit embarrassing back when Dim Leader ran his campaign and said as how he'd given up liquor and everything. And then at 4 o'clock in the morning, there he was on CNN in St. Petersburg and one of those big halls of the Hermitage, sitting there swapping shots with your boss. And we told the Republicans, we told the rubes it was water. That is what vodka means in Polish, isn't it, comrade? A little water, and man, there ain't much water in it, that's for sure. So we'll figure out a way and everything, but my dad's just lying to America. But I'm here to tell you the truth. It's gonna be okay. You know, after you've gotten into the first or second or third round of abject lying, then, well, you kind of get, you're in a funhouse at that point. you're getting kind of in a hall of mirrors. Because you lose track real quick of what's the lie and what ain't. By the way, a little background on that whole split the Mount of Olives business. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, also the Horn's official Jewish mother, just wrote to let me know that the Messiah Jerusalem stuff is based on Kabbalah. The Hebrew word for Jerusalem is plural and is related to the words for waters, as in day two of creation, and heaven. So from this we learn that when the Messiah comes, Jerusalem of the above will be separated from Jerusalem on the earth. And that must be the new Jerusalem that they're talking about in that wild-ass hallucinatory revelation of John, who, if he had lived in the 20th century, would have been, you know, great with Pink Floyd. Wow. So anyway, that's the Russia story. So it comes as no surprise, I guess, that they've got Russian friends, one of whom is young, lovely Zoya, who wants you to understand, wait, but this isn't the Romneys, this is the Aikens. Wants you to understand that the Aikens, well, they're just good people.
12 years of my life, I grew up in Russia. I've known his family since I got to America for 7 years. They're just a great, loving family who, they're just regular people who want nothing but the best for people. I know Congressman Todd Aiken knows what government's job is, that is to protect life, not to control life like they did in Russia. The reason why...
Congressman Todd Aiken knows that the job of government is to protect life, not to take life, like they do in Russia.
I'm guessing maybe old Matt Romney wasn't carrying that message to him when he hollered, "Hey, Tavarich, come here!"
No. We can trust Comrade Aiken to protect life. He will not do awful things like put things in our ears.
Supporting Todd Aiken is because I love this nation. I love my freedoms. I don't want to lose my freedoms. I don't want the same thing to happen to America as what happened to Russia.
I thought we were talking about abortion.
I don't want the same thing to happen to America as happened to Russia.
So what? Is there a Planned Parenthood on every corner in Moscow and St. Petersburg now? With that little backwards R, you know, is there an abortions backwards R us somewhere on the main drag in Minsk? Do abortions make you a communist? Well, let's go back to the First Lady and see what she has to say.
Heart for our country is a heart for the citizens, one that I have probably never, besides him, encountered.
I'm Todd Aiken, and I approve this message.
If only we could figure out what the message was, maybe we'd approve it too, Todd. I mean, was there drinking involved in the scripting of that? Does Missouri have a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot or something? And then there, people were doing field research while they were coming up with that? Man, crazy all over the place. I can't sort that one out. But, you know, be thou not surprised. Here, let's wrap up with one of my all-time favorite liars. Who could that possibly be, Bob? Well, you just have to wait and see.
generations past, the church has always been able to count on the faithful to stand up and protect its sacred rights and duties. This generation of Christians must do the same.
Jesus, I mean, with the soundtrack from like a movie phone ad, wow. Is that Reverend Pastor, Brother, Broadcaster, former Governor Mike Huckabee? Yes, yes it is. And he's here to tell us, brethren and sistren, what it means when we vote.
This November.
By the way, the imagery is all of fire and foundries and forges and, yeah.
Christians across the nation will be put to the test.
Yeah, and by the way, put to the test, what's the imagery? Yes, it's a blacksmith. You know, I don't mean any of that the Longfellow BS about under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands, the smith, a mighty man is he with arms like strong and sinewy. No. No, this is a blacksmith forging a sword, baby! Yeah, and I don't know, maybe he's forging it out of a plowshare or something. These people are nuts.
Many issues.
Wait. What? No, there was words on that metal.
Across the nation will be put to the test. Many issues in.
I think it said Nero. I don't know.
America require hard
work. Jobs.
But how do we know?
Taxes. He's hammering taxes.
If we are building.
Yeah, that says Nero.
Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain.
Does that mean I should hire a priest to do the roof? I'm a little confused here, Mike.
Christians across the nation will have an opportunity to shape the future for our generation and generations to come. Many issues are at stake, but some issues are not negotiable.
I wonder what those would be.
The right to life from conception to natural death.
Natural death. I'm guessing that does not include choosing the time and method of your own going, does it? There, brother, pastor, governor, former presidential candidate, Mac. Natural death. You know, laying in a hospital bed with machines all around you going, beep, 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 and all kinds of funky chemicals running through art lines or IVs and shit. Beep, beep. Yeah, that kind of natural death. And from conception. A right that the right-wing religion industry wants to enforce, but still to this day finds themselves somehow challenged to define. Well, no, that's when the sperm meets the egg. Sperm, egg, egg, sperm. Now we got enough for bridge. I mean, we've seen the videos, right? Millions of sperm. Thousands, at least, sitting there just gnawing away at the eggshell. And then the one lucky one comes a-running through, and boom, there she goes. That life begins at conception business. It kind of throws cold water on all them hard-working sperms, doesn't it? And, you know, what if it was a lazy egg and didn't make its way all the way down the fallopian tubes? And we had some enterprising sperm who went ahead and swam on up. Well, let's see, I don't know, take the left fork. That produces an ectopic pregnancy. It's a problem, those ectopic pregnancies. Life begins at conception. Well, okay, then what is conception? Well, when the sperm meets the egg and they bow to each other and they do-si-do. Then they alleman left and they alleman right. Bow to your partner. I mean, I guess, you know, I'm certainly no physiologist, and not a gynecologist either. But having gone through a couple of pregnancies, well, three to be precise,
with my lovely spouse. I tried to learn a little bit about the process. Seemed rather unfair for me to just, you know, do that whole thanks and, you know, Laurel and Hardy handshake and then drop her off at the doctor's office every couple of weeks. Learned about things like implantation in the uterus. Along the way, you learn things about uterine linings and shedding and... Right! So, you know, not to draw the obvious conclusion between, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, does it make a sound? But is a fertilized egg just sort of sitting in a petri dish? Is that life? Or does it only is it only life when it implants in the uterine wall and begins to form and the placenta begins to form and then it takes nutrients from the mother's body? Is that conception? It's rather, I don't know, a confusingly fluid term. But that's just one of the things that we have to care about as Bible-believing Christians going to the polls.
Marriage should be reinforced, not be defined.
Okay. Marriage should be reinforced, not redefined. That, you know, reinforced, like with rebar and stuff. You know, they stand at the altar and we bring up like 6 foot tall lengths of rebar and we get the welding stuff out. It's going to hurt a little bit for the bride and groom because, you know, them welding torches. And we're going to weld a little rebar cage around them. And I don't know, what after that, brother, pastor, reverend, former governor, television personality, Mike Huckstrebe? What? Concrete? Not redefined. Never mind the fact that we've been redefining marriage. Just about as long as people have been contemplating the idea of it. It may have actually started off, as if we understand our so-called prehistory correctly, it may have started off matrilineally. You know, where Sheena of the cave went and found Gronk and said, "Gronk, you come with me." And Gronk say, "Yes, ma'am." Until whenever that great shift occurred, and the patrimonialists rose up and figured out, yeah. And then it got redefined again as a property transfer. And all the way through the Bible and several other ancient texts, marriage is defined as a property transfer in which the father of the female human relinquishes ownership of the female human to transfer ownership, right, title, and all indices and indicia of said fee simple ownership of the female unto the husband or potential husband or putative husband or whatever. That was another one of those redefinitions. Long about the 15th century, the Roman Catholic Church redefined marriage, saying that it was a sacrament and it was no longer such a filthy and corporeal and physical thing that it could not have the blessings of the church and be performed in church. So it was redefined to be, you know, churchable. Then you get the Reformation, and you get definitions. Right, that gets redefined as to, yeah. And then you get a redefinition of marriage that says, well, you know, never mind what Jesus said or anything. We're going to go ahead and permit divorce because that's probably just smart. So I don't really know what Reverend Pastor, Brother, Former Governor, Broadcast Personality Mike Huckstrebe means when he says that marriage should not be redefined. And never mind the fact, and you probably couldn't get within the past the first couple of syllables with the right-wing religion industry if you were to say to them, listen, it's not marriage we're redefining, it is constitutional rights that we are affirming. Consta what? Don't I take medicine for that, you Marvelline?
It is an egregious violation of our cherished principle of religious liberty for the government to force the church to buy the kind of insurance that leads to the taking of innocent human life.
even if it's not happening. It is not, however, an egregious violation of our cherished principle of religious liberty for the government to force the, well, for the church to sit idly by and use things like, well, Peter owned a sword, to justify a right-wing Republican so-called Christian president's urge to go and bomb the snot out of Iraq. That is not an egregious violation of cherished principles of religious liberty, especially when it is practiced by the religion of which Brother Reverend Pastor, former governor, broadcast media personality Mike Huckabee is a member. That's not that.
Your vote will affect the future.
Okay, I can buy into that.
And be recorded in eternity.
Do what? Recorded in eternity? By whom? I'm just asking.
Will you vote the values that will stand the test of fire?
Fire? How many values stood the test of fire in Rockaway, Brother Reverend Pastor, former governor, broadcast media personality Mike Huckabee? The test of fire? Is the church going to bust out all medieval on our butts? Burn the heretic!
This is Mike Huckabee asking you to join me November the 6th and vote based on values that will stand the test of fire.
Still confused where the fire's coming from. Are they going to beat us up in a blacksmith shop? And we ain't even taken a big old bite out of the crazy yet. Oh, no. No, no. So even though the first 20 minutes of it was missed, that's my fault, not yours. You'll just have to catch up with it on the rerun or on the podcast. Here endeth this Friday on the Front Porch filibobster. It is Friday on the Front Porch, though. And I encourage you to jump in and, God, I got to talk to somebody. I'm babbling along. I was down to the, it was Halloween. Hey, honey, everybody get together. I'm going to read The Cremation of Sam McGee. And no, Dad, you're not. You just stay right where you are and we'll stay where we are. It's been tough. So you know how to reach the program, right? 304-658-3333. Or if you want to reach in on Skype, the handle here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you're not already all friended up, then send me a contact request. I'll confirm it. You can call in. We'll have a lovely little conversation. How does that sound? Yeah. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice, America's home for this little thing we call conversation radio. Head on RadioNetwork.com. This is The Horn. We are listener-supported. And, yeah, we're looking to raise about $150. It'd be nice if we could raise more than that this evening. Because, well, we started in a $150... Well, never mind. PayPal button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. So is the snail mail address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, West Virginia, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Checks, money orders, please do not make them payable to Bob Kincaid. Bob doesn't get the money. The Horn does. So make it payable to Head On Communications, The Horn, something like that. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Light up the phones. We'll be back.
Oh, Grandpa wore his suit and tenor nearly every day. No particular reason, he just dressed that way. Brown necktie and matching vest, both his wingtip shoes. He built a closet on a high back porch, put a penny in a burned out fuse. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stoves, and things. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on the level, he shaped even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Well, he used to sing me Blood on the Saddle and rock me on his knee and let me listen to the radio before we got TV. Well, he'd drive to church on Sunday and he'd take me with him too. Stained glass in every window, hearing aids in every pew. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stoves, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. Was level on level, shaved even every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war. Now my grandma was a teacher, went to school in Bowling Green, traded in a milking cow for a Singer sewing machine. Well, she called her husband Mister, and she walked real tall and proud, and used to buy me comic books after Grandpa died. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, stores, and banks. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes and hammered nails and planks. He was level on a level, shaved on every door, and voted for Eisenhower, cause Lincoln won the war.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. Okay, I think I'm back into the swing of this business. Hour number two. Hey, don't forget to set your clocks back. Sunday night, I'll try to remember to do the same thing. Spring forward, fall back, right? Don't forget to set your clocks back. And if there are any little weird-ass right-wing lurkers out there, don't go to the polls Tuesday and set our country back 100 years. Oh, that's right. Republicans vote on Wednesday. I'm sorry. Kidding. Kidding. I mean, they can get away with it. Let us even joke about it, however, and next thing you know, we'll be in a FEMA re-education camp swapping cigarettes or something. Right? Yeah. It is. It's about 9 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Horn Hour. It's probably something less than triumphant return to the air after the enforced silences of Sandy's impact by way of blizzard on Appalachia. Let us go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Andy.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
I'm just happy as I can be. I'm back at it.
I'm amazed you're up.
I am too. They got power to about a quarter of a mile away from us yesterday, but it took until late this afternoon to get it to us.
I thought you might have had generators at first.
Well, we have a generator, but it didn't do any good because the cable internet service goes out too.
outside because I know my family in New Jersey, nobody's up yet. No phone, no electricity.
It's brutal. Like I said, whatever we went through, Andy, was just an inconvenience compared to the real horror that has yawned open up there.
Well, I know I have an aunt that has a home right off the ocean. I'll bet you that's gone. Gone, goodbye. That's been knocked out in storms that were not nearly as bad as this. So I'm sure there's nothing left.
Well, and like I said, the stuff I've seen from places like Staten Island, Jesus.
You know, Asbury Park, which did get hit a couple years ago when I used to live in the area, that was my local newspaper. I wrote a editorial in response to an editorial written by the Heartland Institute.
Oh, Jesus.
Totally denied climate change. And just hammered on Al Gore and, you know, the big hoax that this was. And I think it even mentioned Inhofe in the article.
Don't you wish, Andy, we could just come up with some sort of rule or encourage somebody in the Senate every time Jim Inhofe stands up from now on to just look at him and say, sit down and shut up.
You know, a newspaper like the Asbury Park Press that just prints an editorial from the Heartland Institute that's totally bogus, totally without any kind of scientific evidence, just a complete bend over backwards for the Koch brothers. That only thing that newspaper is an organ of fascism. That's what the Asbury Park Press is. It is just a complete organ of propaganda and corporate fascism. Period. That's what our newspaper, that's what it's come to. That's what our corporate media has come to, and that's what our newspapers have come to. No climate change. No global warming. Yeah, look now, you jackasses, you morons. That's one reason I'm so happy I got out of there. God, you know, the people, I'm sorry, Bob, the people in New Jersey are stupid. There's a reason people do say jokes about New Jersey. There are stupid people. Matter of fact, I ought to tell you, I was in getting my hair cut one time, and they were having the people in the barbershop I was in were having a talk about Obama, and they were just, you know, cutting him down left and right. And you know me, I'm not a big fan of Obama. But I had to open my mouth and say a few words. Do you know, I got a visit from the cops the next day.
What?
Saying, if I ever go into that barbershop.
Oh, I remember you telling that story. That was the cheap.
I ever open my trap again in that barbershop or I go in there, they'll haul me down into the calaboose. That's the way New Jersey is. These people are ignorant and they're stupid. And I'm sorry to say that, but it's the truth. Anyway, it's just such a shame. And like I said, it's the third world now. We are a third world country because these rich people and these corporations will not contribute to our society. You know we should have had a grid that could withstand something like this. No question. To put older people through this and still no phone service. You can't even, I haven't been able to talk to my mother since this happened. Can't get through and she can't reach me.
That's gotta be nerve-wracking, Andy.
Isn't this something? I can reach my brother though, who has visited with my mother and my brother has had a generator in his house so he could bring my mother over. He's like 10 miles away, so my mother could get warm for a while. But she didn't want to hang out. She'd rather go back to her cold house than hang out with my brother's family. Anyway.
You know, I'm going to just let that one blow past. I mean, you probably know the reasons and wherefores and whys of that better than I do.
I don't think there's any. There's no. I don't really know. There's no. Negativeness there. I think she just wanted to be home.
Well, you know what? Everybody does. Agnes and I were having a conversation about, you know, why don't people leave and that sort of thing. And there's a million different reasons.
She's been in that house for 50 years. My father built it after returning from World War II. She says she's going to die there. I mean, that's it. She doesn't want to leave. She will not leave.
And I think she's kind of got, to a certain extent, she's got that right.
She owns it. They paid it off, her house.
Pays the taxes every year. Yeah.
Right. The old man built it.
So when you got through to your brother, was there any, I mean, was he able to tell you, you know, what kind of state her home is in?
It's a mess. He just said it's a mess. I mean, basically, there's large trees. The trees are really grown in big. Luckily, no tree fell on her house, which could have very easily have happened, which we worry about. But he just said it was a mess. You know, there's all large branches all over the place that have to be cleaned up.
But you raised an issue a moment ago, Andy, that I think, in conjunction with things like climate change, needs to be engaged in this country. You know, the first time I ever heard the phrase used, I heard Robert F. Kennedy Jr. use it. He said, we have got to get serious about grid 2.0.
Right.
And one of the reasons we were without power, you know, yeah, 2 feet of heavy, wet snow fell. And yeah, trees were falling all over distribution lines. But distribution lines and transmission lines are two in very, very different animals. And in our case, the transmission line that goes across Gauley Mountain, which there used to be more of before they blew it all to hell, came down. And that immediately knocked several thousands of people out of power here. Now, we don't have the population density of a New Jersey, obviously.
Right.
But we have some topographical challenges that they don't have. And that's not to compare or say who's better or who's worse. But the fact of the matter is there needs to be a serious conversation in this country about whether or not we are going to continue to rely on a power transmission system whose theoretical scientific origins are somewhere around the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, or maybe 112 or so years later, we might want to start thinking about something else, because the grid that we now have was not designed for efficiency, and it damn sure wasn't designed for customer convenience. It was designed as a profit engine.
Right. We need a new deal as far as the grid goes. You know, particularly the hardship on older people. You know, being in a home that's cold, being in a home that's got no water, you know, that's a hardship for older people they shouldn't be going through.
Right, and I, when I say what I'm about to say, Andy, I don't mean to sound like the only guy who's ever crossed the Atlantic. I'm not doing that. But it is fresh in my memory. If government, and, you know, it was a good deal for the energy companies, too. They're private. But if government gets together with the energy companies and subsidizes what is called in some circles, I think, a distributed grid, where you make it possible for people to put solar panels up and you put wind turbines all over creation and you've got each house generating a certain amount of electricity.
Let's take that $40 billion subsidy to the oil companies and put it towards that. Simple transfer right there. And put it towards that. Let's stop the subsidies to big oil. Let's stop that baloney.
Yeah, I think when I heard Bobby talking about it, he said cost estimates were that it would run somewhere around $1 trillion. But mm-hmm. God, is there a thing out there that would be a better spending of $1 trillion, Andy? I mean, think about the people who would go to work building
that. Infrastructure is a
and
great
if every business is sitting there generating a little bit of electricity and putting it onto the grid, then maybe we could get to where they are, where we only have outages that are measured in minutes and not in freaking months per year.
Right, and that could be paying us back for years to come. It could be a big boom to industry. And that's the biggest thing. That's the biggest reason why corporations move, and that's the biggest reason corporations build plants. It's not because of tax breaks and tax incentives. It's because of infrastructure. Having a good infrastructure will bring in business and gives business a reason to build a plant.
Yeah.
A green field or brown field or whatever. Fix up older.
Well, I mean, I think just this is just a really stupid example. But, for instance, if you walk into one of your local big box retailers, you can find a Suave brand, you know, the shampoos. You can find a Suave brand of herbal mint shampoo, okay? And it's, you know, they probably test it on kittens and do all kinds of evil shit with it, and it's made in a plant that probably pumps filth into somebody's groundwater supply. Who knows?
As a matter of fact, as a summer job, I used to fill bottles of shampoo for Suave.
No kidding.
Anyway,
I love the
way. New Jersey.
I love the way.
Yeah, I had a job doing that. I think it was subcontracted out to this small manufacturing company I worked for a little while for a summer job.
I love the way the universe works. Well, on the other hand, there's a little company, I think they're up in Minnesota or somewhere, and they're not that little. They're called Aveda. And they were the ones who originated the rosemary mint shampoo. I first ran across it in D.C. The night of the inauguration in the hotel room that I stayed in. And it was like, I don't know, it was like putting crack on your scalp or something. It was just like all tingly and refreshing. And I loved it. And it's considerably more expensive than the Suave stuff, but I did some research on the Aveda people, and lo and behold, it's made in a plant that is entirely powered by wind.
Cool.
And so all of a sudden I'm thinking, you know what? I'm willing to pay a little extra for that shampoo. And
yeah, I heard you mention that. You've mentioned that before. I'm the same way. If it's a good product, it's made in the U.S., and it's doing things that are environmentally sound, I'll pay more. I have no problem with that, especially if it's employing American workers, because I thoroughly believe in this system of the multiplier effect. You buy things in America, you multiply that dollar in the hands domestically. It's not going
right, and it's not even. You said I believe in the multiplier effect, and I'm not being cantankerous or anything, but I don't think you even have to believe in it. I think it's factual, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an economic principle. Just keeps on multiplying that dollar. Spend the money here. So make that plant profitable, so they can expand, and they can their workers can spend their money in their locale, and expand the money there. Keep on growing.
I mean, some of this stuff is.
Wonderful concept.
Some of this stuff is not rocket science, Andy.
Right. And our idiots who believe in this globalization, for some reason that concept went way over their heads. I love it when, like, they buy manhole covers from India, which they do in this town of Redwood City, and they do in New York City. That's great. Buy
Jesus Christ, can you imagine? Yeah, what? Manhole covers? What do you reckon the carbon outlay is to take a crate of manhole covers from India to the Pacific coast or the Atlantic coast? Jesus.
Absolutely. And you could just imagine the cheap labor used to make those in India.
Because that's got to be coming on a boat. That's not
oh,
being...
Oh, the carbon footprint on that? Yeah, it's got to be tremendous. Oh, absolutely, it's got to be on a boat. Yeah, the carbon footprint must be huge. That's one of the stupidest ass things I've ever seen when city councils make a decision. The buyers of our government money makes a decision to buy manhole pieces of iron in a foreign country. That is insanity. Total insanity. When there's plenty of plants nearby that can make that iron and make that steel. That is,
well, did you happen
no
to
more
see...
more insane things have I ever seen.
In the last few days, there's been a photo circulating. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's of two different pieces of campaign swag. One of them is a Romney piece, and the other one is an Obama piece, and it's a close-up of the tag on them. And, of course, naturally, you can also, you can probably just guess right off the bat, but the tag on the Romney article says, you know, made in China. Whereas on the Obama piece, there's an American flag on it, and it says, proudly made in the United States of America.
Great.
So who's the internationalist... Right, yeah. But you mentioned globalization, and that took me back. You know, it was that hateful old hag Margaret Thatcher who coined the acronym TINA with regard to globalization, wasn't it? Remember TINA, Andy? There is no alternative. And people just latched onto, oh, well, okay, if Margaret Thatcher says there's no alternative. I mean, she wouldn't lie or anything. Iron Lady, right?
She's a witch is what she is.
But
she just hated working people.
Right. She would have been a perfect
hated
fit
workers.
Would have been a perfect fit for the Republican Party. But she created
Reagan got along famously, of course.
Yeah. But she created that idea of there is no alternative to globalization. But the nice thing is there are some marketing and economic thinkers out there who created, I heard about this a couple or 3 years ago, who created an alternative to Tina, and it's called Lois, L-O-I-S, locally owned, independently sourced, or internally sourced, I forget. But it's a way for communities to survive without participating in the nightmare of globalization.
Lois, huh?
Yeah. Tina and
That's
Lois.
That's great. Yeah. I'll go for Lois.
Yeah, me too.
I mean,
well, it feels better, doesn't it?
Especially when it comes to food. Yeah, that fits right in. Buy local, man. Buy local. There's no need to have that carbon footprint. No need at all. Now, talking about mittens that you just brought up, I heard of an article that I was looking at the other day. You know, he invested in 77 businesses while he was at the helm of Bain in 15 years, from 1984 to 1999. And 22% of those 77 businesses went bankrupt. So I think that's about 17 companies. And another 8 lost money. For Bain were losers. So that brings it up to like 23 companies. Usually on average, when private equity goes in, invests in companies, so he had like a 22% bankruptcy rate. The average usually has a 7% bankruptcy rate of a private equity firm going in. So he was like triple the bankruptcy rate. He couldn't even run a private equity firm in the normal bankruptcy rates. Even though it's a vulture business anyway. But he was 3 times worse than the average vulture. I just directed to that article the other day. It was a Wall Street Journal article that came out in January. But 17 companies out of 77 bankrupt, and bring another 8 more that lost money that were on the verge of going under.
And then it turns out one of the things that I picked up on during the great silence of the last 3 days, Andy, was this this thing that was unearthed, I think, by Bloomberg News as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request that, how did they phrase it? Romney rented the Mormon Church's tax-exempt status to hide a bunch of his wealth. You know, he won't release the tax returns, and now we begin to understand why.
He gives more money to the Mormon Church than he even pays in taxes. And, of course, he says that's charity, and that's baloney. That's not charity. That's giving to a political organization, because the Mormon Church uses their money for right-wing causes, like it did with Proposition 8.
Yep.
So famously here with the gay marriage thing. So as far as I'm concerned, the Mormon Church is a political entity, and he's like giving, that's not charity. That's baloney. No, it wouldn't surprise me at all, Bob, that he uses the church in some.
Well, it was money. It was a tax dodge that was used up till 1996. It was called a unitrust, and they were made illegal in 1996, but Willard got in just under the wire, and the one thing that they did find was just a few hundreds of thousands of dollars. But if they found that one, you know, where there's smoke, and it's disgusting that he would, because basically what it does is it creates a trust in the name of, for instance, the Mormon Church, but for all intents and purposes, within the structure of a unitrust. And David K. Johnston, in the book Perfectly Legal, wrote about this. I wrote about the unitrust at some length. The people setting up the trust don't ever actually relinquish control of the monies. So it's just a dodge. And so, you know, yeah, so now we know. Now we know why he doesn't want anybody to see his tax returns.
Yeah, as I remember, there are 2 types of trust, and now I'm forgetting the technical name for them, but one, you can't change the terms and conditions of, and the other one, you can, the person who is the guardian or the underwriter of the trust can actually go back and change the terms and conditions. That must be the one with the lesser amount of requirements on it. I forget, there's a technical name. You're the lawyer, Bob.
No, I'm not a lawyer.
Russ Law? No. Well, you have a law degree, right?
Yeah. Somehow or another, I miraculously escaped with one of those.
Oh, what is that? The name of the tip, but it must be the type of trust that's less...
Oh, like a Totten Trust or something like that? But, no, this thing...
Irrevocable. Irrevocable.
Yeah, revocable versus irrevocable.
Right. I think that's the technical term. So it must be revocable.
Well, back when they were all the rage in the mid-90s, everybody and their cousin had them. I mean, Bill Gates had them. Everybody who had a couple of millions to rub together had them.
Right, and you know that, of course, Romney, when he was running for Senate against Teddy Kennedy, was getting on Kennedy's case over his trust of how, you know, even though it was supposed to be a blind trust, it really isn't blind. And that's true. And let's turn the tables on Mittens. Yeah, you got trust, too. How about all those foreign investments? Who directs those? You do, scumbag.
Right, and
like,
well, and even
Kennedy for directing his trust money.
Even scummier is the fact that he's directed a bunch of the monies over into Ann's trust. It's Ann's money.
Right. Another tax dodge of some sort, or something to save his behind. But these guys are too, you know, it's too much. It's a shame Obama really doesn't get down in the trenches and play some real hardball with Romney. There's so much you could nail this SOB for.
But if it turns out that he wins on Tuesday, which I am not willing to concede, if it turns out that Obama wins on Tuesday, will we say that he ran it better than we knew how? I mean, he certainly couldn't have been counting.
As a vulture capitalist, he wasn't even good. He wasn't even good at that. He had tripled the rate of bankruptcies. He couldn't even run a vein. He wasn't even successful at.
Right, but I'm saying if Obama wins, will we concede that for all the, you know, I mean, for all the angst that we have shed, that maybe his campaign people knew what they were doing? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to win either. Or, you know, machines being machines, I don't know if he's going to be allowed to win.
Well, that's what I was just thinking, that what you just said about the machine. They can steal any. If they Romney wins.
Well, how are you going to truck off?
Because they stole it.
The New York Times just put out an alert that I'm looking at here. U.S. military to truck fuel to region hit by Hurricane Sandy. Okay,
My brother was telling me in New Jersey it's a living hell getting gas. Like, he can't get gas for his generator even to run because the lines are so long. Because the lines for gas are miles long in northern New Jersey. It's insane. Like I said, this is third world, man.
Well, and it's not that it just became third world, Andy. This is the third worldism of a generation of Republican economic policy exposing us. But what I was going to say is, okay, the military is going to truck fuel into the area. That's great. That is an appropriate, you know, that seems appropriate. I guess it'll be National Guard or somebody like that. But here's the question. How in the hell are you going to fire up all the voting machines in New York, in New Jersey, in places that were expected to trend heavily toward Obama in the first place?
Right. You got me. They used Sequoia machines in New Jersey. I always refused to use it. I wouldn't use the electronic poker machines or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think the poker machines are actually a little more honest.
Yeah, they're probably more accurate. They have to be for the House. But, yeah, I would never use them. So my votes probably usually didn't count because I always asked for the paper.
Well, can they even get paper ballots in?
I doubt it. It'd be too many.
Oh, you're going to love this.
They're not ready for this. I don't know how they're going to run an election. You just said they canceled the marathon. If they're going to cancel the marathon, they might as well cancel the election. You don't have, you can't, how can you do it without the electricity? It's impossible.
I don't know. I mean, I would think they could get enough generator power to light up a polling place, but you're going to have to use paper ballots. And who's going to count them? Who knows how? But remember, it's like transitioning from stone points to gunpowder weapons overnight. It doesn't take long before the previous technology is lost. Do we even remember how to count paper ballots? Because there is a how to count paper ballots methodology, Andy.
Right, and remember, this is New Jersey, too.
Yeah. Speaking of New Jersey, Tim from L.A. just sent something along to me that you're going to love. It's a tweet. Yeah, I mean, you know that Limbaugh was having a fit, right, because Christie went out and treated President Obama like a decent human being instead of the Kenyan anti-colonialist Muslim that he deserved to be treated like, right?
Right.
Apparently, Chris Christie has his own Twitter account. This looks real because the Twitter account is at GovChristieNJ. And it says, yes, Rush Limbaugh, I'm fat. Yes, I can be a fool. But at least I'm not a thrice-divorced fat fool caught illegally scoring painkillers.
Yeah.
God, I hope that's real. Because, you know what?
I mean,
say what we will, and we've said plenty about Chris Christie. The guy will not sit there and just let you goon on him without shooting back. So that's, I mean, there's something about that that makes me willing to believe it.
Now, the guy loves attention, and he's a counterpuncher, and he's not afraid to open his big trap, and he doesn't care what comes out of it. But I'll tell you, when it comes to a guy that hates working people, that does everything he can to discredit unions and just put people in a desperation mode, as far as a worker goes, it's him.
Oh, that's your guy.
He's a friend of the plutocracy. And he's playing this for all it's worth. He is. But you know it. He's in the pocket of the Koch brothers. He's their boy. The Koch brothers would love nothing more than to get him in the White House. Because then it'll be Katie.
So then drilling down one layer, do we take this then as an indication that the Koch brothers have pretty much mailed in Romney's chances and decided that, you know, they'll back Christie in 16?
I don't think there's any doubt if Christie runs, the Koch brothers are behind him. You know, the Brad Friedman disclosed that thing where Christie was flown in to Beaver Creek, Colorado, to give the headline speech for all the plutocrats that showed up with the Koch brothers for their fundraising efforts that they had for the super PAC that they run. But all the big plutocrats were there, like the Charles Schwabs of the world, the Coors folks, you know, that woman Hendricks from Wisconsin was there. You know, you name it, the Mellons, you name it, in the plutocracy, they showed up to that event, and the guest speaker was Chris Christie. Flew him in, flew him out, sight unseen. You know, like it never happened. But the Koch brothers are right behind Christie. And one of the first things Christie did was he got rid of a tax that Corzine tried to put in on the richest people in New Jersey to try to shore up that budget deficit that New Jersey had. Well, he got rid of that right away. I think it was a special tax on people who made over $250,000 a year. It would have raised like $500 million in New Jersey to help shore up the budget. He got rid of that right away. From the first things Christie did when he got in office. Instead, he put it, you know, on the working people, on the fees, and cut back benefits and cut back pensions and up the retirement ages.
Yeah, I'm not by any means going to start singing the man's praises, but it was at least nice to note. What did the Republicans want him to do? Come out and spit on Obama's shoes or something?
Political expediency for him, man. Political expediency makes him look good. He can might run again for governor.
Sure. Well, he's got to do that in what, 14? And at this point, if he handles it halfway competently, doesn't this make him a lock if he runs again?
The feather in his cap, boy. Bipartisan, working with the Democratic president in a Democratic. He's in a blue state. The Democrats might actually get smart and not run a friggin' another plutocrat and friggin' Wall Street criminal like John Corzine. Instead, they might actually run somebody that could win, which they didn't do the last time. because you knew from the get-go Corzine was not going to win. People hated him for what he was all about because of the auction rate security stuff he did with all the bonds at New Jersey got caught up in a big bond scandal with their Port Authority bonds in Delaware. It was a total fiasco. And Corzine kept on upping fees on people. He was also taxing the middle class and the working class and upping all the tolls on the toll roads, anything to, you know, nickel and dime, making you pay for parking at bus stations you never had to pay for before, anything to you know, increase the coffers of the state, but putting it on the backs of working people with regressive taxes left. And you were being nickeled and dimed to death by Corzine. And finally, he went after the rich people with a tax, but that was too late.
You know, it's already had enough. It's interesting. Ray just wrote in, Andy, and said, under the subject line, forget about it. He says, funny how Tony Soprano's everybody's buddy now, referring to Christie. And, you know...
No, he's eating this up, man. This is his time in the sun, man.
Well, yeah, I mean...
The limelight for him.
Give some credit for a certain amount of political astuteness. And I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying in general. The man played it right. And it was easy to play right.
It sure was. He just doesn't have to say anything stupid.
You know, show up, shake the president's hand. Yeah.
Right. Go in a helicopter, take a helicopter ride with him. He likes helicopters. That's how he goes to his son's football game.
That's true. Look statesmanlike.
Right.
And, yeah, Irish Dave was just reminding me that, no, he runs next year in New Jersey if he runs again. And why wouldn't he?
There you go. Yeah, he's not going to pull a Sarah Palin. He knows he's not a quitter, evidently.
No.
A lot of his forte comes from, too, and the gravitas with the Republicans. He was a lobbyist before getting elected for the prison industrial complex.
Well, and before that, he was a U.S. attorney, wasn't he?
Yeah, that too.
So, you know, somebody gave him a law degree, and that's got to mean something. It means he got in. It means he got out. So there's, I mean, then again, yeah, Willard's got a law degree, too.
Yeah, that and an MBA.
Yeah, it sort of takes the shine off of having one of those when, yeah.
Especially when you're a failure, even as a private equity guy when it comes to bankruptcies. Anyway. Yeah, the last time I talked to you, too, I brought up the big settlement that Bank of America had, $2.43 billion. I couldn't remember the CEO. It was Kenneth Lewis, Kenneth D. Lewis. And Brian Moynihan is there now, but it was Lewis that did the was the CEO under that. That's the guy that should be in jail.
Yeah, Moynihan.
John Thain was at Merrill. He should be in jail, another plutocrat.
Yeah, Moynihan was the guy I addressed down in Charlotte.
Right, that's who you saw in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Hey, I sent you that Anna Eshoo letter. What the heck is up with her? Man, she's got a beautiful letter there, how she's supporting H.R. 5959, mountaintop removal.
Well, she may support it, but she ain't signed it.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
It's gotten to her that they got that letter all ready to rock and roll, because, man, that came right back to me after my phone call. I got on the web, you know, after talking to her, and next thing I know, the letter was there within maybe a half hour. They didn't just write that up. They had that ready to rock and roll. That's pretty interesting.
Well, that means a number of people have probably contacted her about the same thing if they've got a form letter already.
I had a number of times, too, but I never got a letter.
Well, because I communicated some of that to my buddy Bo, and we're gonna put her on the list to make sure.
Put the hammer down.
Because we've been trying to get in to see her for a good while, and they're always too busy, or they hear their mother, or the dog ate their contact sheet for that day, or right.
I hope you get in. You ought to get in for sure. But she's too busy with the CEOs like Larry Ellison, because she's Silicon Valley's emissary to Washington, you know, guys like Larry Ellison at Oracle, or John Chambers over at Cisco, or, you know, the guys at Google, Sergey and the other.
I forget if it's Cisco. No, I think
that's who.
I think it's Sun Microsystems who is a West Virginia boy, I think. But, yeah, one of those guys is a West Virginia kid, so you never know who's talking to who.
Well, the guy that used to be CFO at Oracle, who's now at the big venture capital firm here, he used to get his name in the press quite a bit, was a West Virginia guy. And I think he's on the board of a lot of Silicon Valley companies. He's at Kleiner Perkins now, the big venture capital firm. I can't remember his name.
Well, it's nice when one of the local guys makes it good.
Yeah, his claim to fame is too. I know he was president of his fraternity at the University of West Virginia, too. He's a big frat guy. Yeah, he's from West Virginia. What is his name? Because you see his name all over Silicon Valley, because he's probably on five or six boards. You know, it's a big incestuous...
Right, everybody knows everybody.
Crony system. Everybody scratches each other's back on the boards. The boards totally don't work. You know, it's total cronyism. But
oh, okay. And
where the corporate board is.
Randy in PA is reminding me that Oracle gobbled up Sun a few years ago. So
correct. Larry Ellison's owns Oracle. Used to be, what was his name? Used to be head of Sun. McNeely. Scott McNeely used to be the head of Sun, but Larry blew him out, and you don't hear from him very much anymore. But he's a multimillionaire, so he still gets his, when he opens his trap, they still listen to him. He's a big Republican, too, this guy McNeely. For sure, he's good friends with Jack Welch. They play golf all the time.
Oh, what a lovely 18 holes that would be!
Can you imagine what they talk about? How we're going to screw the working people? How we're going to run this country?
Yeah,
the Anna Eshoo thing. That letter did surprise me. Man, she's on board. So co-sponsor it. What's up?
Wow.
Hey, one other thing, too. You know, one thing Obama should try to do as quickly as hopefully he gets elected, he'll do this right away when Congress is out, you know, for the holidays. They've got to get rid of that Edward DeMarco over at the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Man, get rid of that clown, and let's get the housing situation under control. Because that clown has been blocking everything that Obama's tried to do, you know, with those different programs to do a little cram down on the principal of some of those mortgages and so forth and get Fannie and Freddie on board. But DeMarco's been the guy who's been stopping that and squelching all the efforts of the Democrats. God, Obama's got to get... There's so many things Obama could have done to increase his odds and chances. Well, one of them should have been to have blown away Edward DeMarco a long time ago, and he didn't do it. Now, there's so many people he should have removed from the old Bush regime that he didn't do that have totally been a thorn in his side, you know, a big wrench in the whole works. But DeMarco's got to go.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what, I guess they're saying Hillary is willing to serve a second term as Secretary of State.
Well, don't do us any favors, please, Hillary. Please, no favors. Well, you know who wants to get in there real bad is John Kerry from Massachusetts.
Yeah, oh, he'd love to.
He wants in. And that woman Rice, too, from the UN, she was hoping to get in. Maybe that's why she was running interference on that Libya thing for so long with that stupidness about it being because of the video. But she was hoping to be in the running for State Department, too. It'll probably go to Kerry, though, I guess.
Oh, okay. And I think the West Virginia guy I was thinking about might be John Chambers.
Oh, he's West Virginia, too. He's at Cisco.
Okay, yeah,
he's
Cisco.
At Cisco.
Yeah.
But there was another guy that used to be CFO at Oracle who's another big guy. But you're right, Chambers is another West Virginia guy.
Yeah, I think, Well, we've got to, there's a lot of us proud sons of Harvard on the Mon wandering around out there.
Yeah. I'm not a real fan of Mr. Chambers. He's gotten a little bit of a lot of people. It's a tough work. They're very tough on the working people in that organization. He slashes and burns quite easily. Matter of fact, I just had dinner with a
Larry Ellison?
Larry Ellison's head of Oracle.
Yeah.
But I just had dinner with a friend, and he brought his son along. His son used to work at Cisco, and he just quit because he couldn't stand working there. He hadn't been there for like five years. Even in this economy, he said, that's enough. Couldn't stand it. He's in a manufacturing. He's an engineer. He's got a Berkeley degree. But that's enough. Enough at Cisco.
Wow.
You know, the working people just aren't treated well, period. It's just across the board. You know, management, they just think they can tell you to do anything and work all kind of hours. And, you know, you don't have a union, you got nothing. Anyway.
Marty, with a question for you before you go. He says, is DeMarco a former political appointee converted to civil service?
I'm not sure. I just know he is a holdover from the Bush regime. And I believe he was one of those people, and when they had that meeting at one of the downtown Washington hotels with Mitch McConnell, Chinless Mitch, and they were making, and they had all the House people there, too, like that House guy, Ryan, and the guy from Richmond, Virginia, the House guy there, the other heavy hitter. And they decided, you know, that they were going to destroy Obama, and they were going to just block everything Obama did. I think DeMarco was in on that meeting, that he's one of the people that was in on that. And his total deal has been to try to destroy and block everything that Obama's trying to do as far as reviving the housing market. But somehow I believe he is connected to Bush.
Wow.
You just real quick, do you know Lordstown, Ohio?
And
the big GM plant that was saved?
Yeah.
Do you believe they have a mayor of that town? His name is, I read this article real quick, but I think his name is Amos A. Hill, the mayor of that town. He worked at that Lordstown GM plant for like 20, well, actually, I think he worked at Delphi for 22 years. Delphi has a plant in Lordstown, too, with the big GM plant. It's one of the biggest in the world. Here's a guy, a Republican, and he's going to vote for Romney after that plant got bailed out, you know, by Obama with the whole bailout.
Jesus.
It was an article, a 915, about bailed out by Obama, but rooting for Romney. And here's the mayor of Lordstown, who his bacon basically got saved. That whole city got saved by Obama. And here, he's an ex-union guy. And he's voting for, and he's a Republican, he's going to vote for Romney.
Oh, God.
What's the problem with this country? Where do these union guys, where do they ever even see that they can be a Republican in this current Republican Party?
But you know what? That's not necessarily new. I happened to be doing a little research last night, just digging around, trying to find a couple of answers to things. And I was reminded, you know, at one point in time, the most powerful labor union in the United States was the United Mine Workers. John L. Lewis was a Republican all his life. And in fact, although the UMWA endorsed FDR in 1936, in 1940 they didn't, but John L. Lewis personally endorsed Wendell Willkie.
Right.
So we may think,
I heard that same story, yeah.
We may think simply because, you know, what is foremost in our vision is what is nearest to our eyes in terms of the times we live in, that there's something novel in that. It's really not. I mean, Jesus, don't you reckon there were a whole bunch of Eisenhower Union households?
Yeah, mine.
Well, okay.
My father was UAW. He was a Republican. And he switched 10 years before he died. He saw the light even in the late 80s at the party. Had left him, but he was an Eisenhower Republican, and so was my grandfather, who was a union machinist. Same thing.
Well, it's like the
but
line
that
from that.
That was a different Republican Party, though, Bob. Of course,
I'm not so sure, Andy.
Well, during Eisenhower's time, once if you read the Republican platform during Eisenhower's time, it was more to the left than the current Democrats are, for sure.
Oh, certainly. I've read some of the preamble stuff of that Republican platform. But by the same token, remember,
partly might have been different, though.
Remember, it was Harry Truman who, as one of the centerpieces of his policy goals for the United States, for the post-war United States, was to have a national health insurance plan.
Absolutely.
Well, who killed it?
Right.
The Republican Congress.
And probably some help from the Dixiecrats, too.
Oh, well, by 1948, they'd lost their minds. Because Harry Truman had a civil rights platform.
Right.
And when the Up East Democrats pushed through even stronger civil rights language in the 1948 convention, that's when the Dixiecrats were formed and they nominated Strom freaking Thurmond to run for the presidency of the United States.
Right. But when you had a 40% unionization rate of working people in this country during the late 40s and the 50s, the only way the Republicans could win was they had to try to woo union people, and they had to put things in their platform, and they had to have some representation that were representing union interests.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
it's to crush unions and crush working people.
Meanwhile, fast forward to today, it is mind-boggling to realize that the United Mine Workers of America couldn't bring themselves to endorse Barack Obama for a second term. Now, they endorsed him in 2008, but then they got played by the mine owners and the mine corporations into this whole war on coal line of unmitigated horse shit.
Right.
And no, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't endorse that one.
Yeah, right. Insane. Just totally insane. A party that wants to do nothing else but crush your livelihood and crush your benefits and your ability to collectively bargain. I mean, come on. And that's like voting for somebody that has an axe and wants to put it across your neck. It's incredible.
And it just kind of lets you know. Well, I mean, they have next to no influence whatsoever anymore. They're, practically dead. And it's sad. It's sad because the fact of the matter is, the UMWA meant a lot to my father and to my grandfather and to my great grandfather, and they're just kind of now.
Yeah, so many of these unions become captive to management and captive to the industry. They almost become part of the trade group.
Well, and look, if you're living the good life in the upper stratospheric reaches, you don't necessarily have the same problems that the member of your rank and file does.
Right, exactly. A lot of these union leaders end up siding more with, like, Andy Stern. Andy Stern is a prime example of that, a turncoat. And I used to be in the SEIU, and I could not stand Andy Stern because he didn't represent the working class, the rank and file at all. He had totally, gotten in bed with management and with the upper class and the top 1%. The same thing is going on in South Africa. The same exact thing. These union workers, rank and file, have seen that their unions no longer represent them, so they're splitting off and starting their own unions and forget the established unions because they don't work. They're not functioning for them. They're functioning only for management and for the leadership. And they figured that out. I wish our guys would figure that out here.
Well, it's hard enough to be in a union at all anymore simply because of the uneven playing field that, beginning with things like Taft-Hartley.
Right. It's so difficult to organize here. I mean, prime example, Walmart. How, management can just crush organization efforts.
Exactly.
Get new unions started. Hey, great job with that Peter B. Collins clip you did. I thought you did wonderful. I thought it came over real well, hopefully.
Well, thank you very kindly. I hope people take action and go and help us get the ACE Act moving. If we got a few more friends into the Horn family into the bargain too, that'd be wonderful as well.
Always gotta
looking to increase participants in the conversation. Andy, have yourself a wonderful evening. I hope you get through to your mom and our best to her.
Yeah, you got to repeat. You got to drive it home. You know, just keep it up. Keep on hitting, you know, anywhere you can get on with this AIC Act.
We're trying.
Let's work on Anna, man, if we can get her.
Yeah, anybody in Anna Eschew's district, get hold of her.
I'll keep pushing here.
All right.
All right.
Thank you for
great
everything,
call,
Andy. Have a good evening.
Have a nice weekend.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, have a nice weekend. Yeah, it's here, isn't it? I'm going to get up tomorrow and think it's Wednesday. Honest to God, I will. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, that's quite a conversation you had with Andy, that's for sure.
Andy is something. He always brings a ton to the table. But you know a little bit about that, too.
Oh, I concur, and I wish him well in his efforts to contact his family, because I know that can be very disconcerting when you cannot contact people you love, particularly when they are in a catastrophic situation that is ongoing as we speak.
Yeah, I think we've only begun to see the beginnings of it.
Oh, it's absolutely. That's it. I mean, I have never seen such destruction in my life.
And you've seen them hit the coastline where you grew up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I remember back in 1989 what Hugo did to Charleston. But they will rebuild, and they will come out of this. And I'm confident of that because it's too vital an element to our own economy.
Well, it absolutely is, Jim, but I would add a caveat to that. I mean, I think we have to take Willard Romney seriously when he says that he thinks FEMA should be privatized.
Well, I don't agree with that. And I think FEMA should be allowed to, if anything, in light of the things that have been happening to this country over the past X number of years, well, in the past decade, I think it would show the importance of FEMA and the necessity of it being strengthened and not, you know, degraded.
Right. But meanwhile, did you see the story over the last several days? You know that lunatic Steve King from Iowa?
Oh, Bob, there's so many damn lunatics out there. I can't.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's one of the real woohoo crazies. It was Tuesday when he said that no FEMA aid should be approved for the areas devastated by Sandy without a specific spending plan. And he said he wanted to make sure that FEMA funds were not used for, and this is a quote, Jim, Gucci bags and massage parlors like after Katrina.
Say what? Gucci bags and massage parlor?
Yeah. He said,
I don't see where that has anything to do with it. I mean, we're talking about people who are struggling for their lives.
He said, I want to get them the resources that are necessary to lift them out of this water and the sand and the ashes and the death that's over there in the East Coast and especially in the Northeast, but not one big shot to just open up the checkbook because they spent it on Gucci bags and massage parlors and everything you can think of in addition to what was necessary. He was talking about post-Katrina. And this man has said a lot of hateful stuff in his life. But I really, really think he topped them all with that.
Well, that's quite a poser, that's for sure.
And he also voted, it should be noted, he voted against Hurricane Katrina relief.
Well, what did this fool expect people to do?
Well, he sure was standing there with his hand out when those good, upstanding, fine Christian white folks in Iowa were up to their necks in the flooded Mississippi for a couple of years back.
Yeah, well,
see,
that doesn't surprise.
You don't have to dig too deep in these right-wing fundamentalist Christians. You don't have to scratch very hard at all before some of the patina comes off under your fingernails and you find that you're looking at a straight-up, unreconstructed, damn near a Klansman racist.
Well, I think that goes without saying.
I mean, Gucci bags and massage parlors? So, in other words, he wants to make sure that only the right people get help. And it's just, you know, it's curious, of course, that right and white just happen to, you know, rhyme.
Well, I don't understand that. And I don't understand Gucci bags and massage parlors. I mean...
Well, and here's the thing.
Did he have any references to the fact that that's what funds were going for?
No, they never do.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they say anything. I mean, you have referenced on this program tonight all types of chicanery and absolute madness in what people are saying in order to swing this election, in order to, you know, to denigrate efforts made by the federal government to genuinely assist the needy. Not only needy, God, we're talking about downtrodden. We're talking about people whose homes have been destroyed.
We're talking about the very, very basics of survival itself, Jim.
Exactly. The very bottom of Maslow's pyramid. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And yet, they still are trumpeting this, that, and the other on one hand, but yet when the money is handed out to them and their individual constituents in their districts, well, they sing a different tune, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, as Betsy just noted in a message to me, she said, we're talking about American citizens. But see, in this guy's world, they're not necessarily... There are good American citizens... And, well, those American citizens. But the fact of the matter is, and this is the scary thing, he said this past Tuesday. And anybody who holds the franchise in this country, Jim, who goes to the polls and still votes for that creep, is as sick or possibly sicker than he is. And you know, here's the little ugly moment. The man will be... on Tuesday, re-elected.
Well, that very well may be true. I don't know. He probably will. But it's just amazing how people will vote with their pocketbooks or vote with those people who will promise them that their pocketbooks will be enhanced if you vote for me.
But in this case, they're not even doing that, Jim. He's not in. We're talking about a district in Iowa, the 5th congressional district, that includes Sioux City and Council Bluffs. Okay, I'm sure there are some wealthy people there, but for the most part, the people who vote for Steve King are the same kind of idiots that go to the polls and vote for 1L Michelle Bachmann. You know, they vote for him because he's trying to protect the little fetuses. And he wants to keep marriage between one man and one woe man.
Well, they're mixing up so many things that have nothing to do with the other. That's the problem I have with this. I mean, they can't delineate between what is real and what is unreal, and they cannot delineate between a respectable judgment and their own prejudices to which these people are trying to appeal, meaning the Romney Republicans. Or I refer to him as now, since Halloween and before that, Count Mitchell.
And I do love that, Count Mitchell. Does that mean that Paul Ryan is his Renfield?
Yeah, I'm sure he can eat enough bugs. And he's just sitting in his prison cell or in his insane asylum waiting for the master to come back to him. But you remember what happened to Renfield. He got his neck to give him the wrong twist. But not too much to go into all that. My God in heaven, there's so much been going on recently and pursuing.
Well, how much snow did y'all get over there where you are?
I'll just use my favorite number, 19.
Wow.
Yes, 19 off a patio now.
Well, I know things got back to some semblance of normalcy a little faster over there than they did over here, but
I've only flickered here a couple times. thankfully.
My yeah. God, it was so nice, Jim. I had a couple of light switches turned on just so I'd know when the power came back, and suddenly the lights. Is that you, Lord? Oh, it was nice. And then we went into sweat condition alpha, trying to get the studio ready to be able to get a show out. And then, of course, I screwed up the start of the program, naturally.
Well, I think you've probably been dealing with a hell of a lot of problems besides that, and keeping your generator going and your family warm. And so it's quite understandable that you wouldn't hit the right switch. I mean, I haven't gone through all that. And sometimes I hit the wrong switch. Like, I had problems with the router and finally got that resolved.
Yeah, I just counted them here. There's 6 things I have to do right to make a show go out. Well, 7, actually. And, you know, you miss one and everything goes sideways.
Well, by God, you're not an octopus.
I think I'm definitely not as smart as one.
Well, you can only do so much, that's for sure.
Yeah, of course, you know, you mentioned the word octopus, Jim, always brings to mind one of my very, very favorite jokes of all time. We won't go through the whole thing, but the punchline is, play it. If I can get its pajamas off, I'm going to earn it.
Oh, you are a sketch. That is for sure. But, you know, going back to all these problems and all these interlocking directions between the people who are in positions of power and the financiers and the heads of these companies and things like that, I mean, they believe in one thing and one thing only, and that's their own version of the golden rule. He who has the goal makes the rule.
And why is it then so difficult to get across the idea that corporations behave as corporations behave, Jim, because they have only one legal duty? Well, maybe two. They've got to be law-abiding, but their only duty is to make a profit.
Well, that's it. This whole country is driven by profit, and profit is king. You know, going back to Wall Street, back that movie in 1980 with Michael Douglas. What was it? Gordon Gekko's philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing. And that has been implanted into the minds of every person in the world trying to scale the corporate ladder. Hooray for me and to hell with anybody else, and we don't care whose company we crush, whose benefits we destroy, whose lives we destroy, or the negative impact it will have at that level. They don't care. I mean, they have gotten to the point that greed is good. And that is, the thing that was trying to come out of the mouth of Gordon. Well, it did come out of the mouth of the guy, Kurt Douglas, playing Gekko.
Yeah.
Greed is good. And the more we have, the better it is for us. And at whose cost? They do not care. There's a loss of humanity, a loss of humility, and a loss of compassion for anybody else who is beneath you. And if you're on the ladder beneath me, I'm going to step on your hands.
And step on them? Stomp on them, Jim.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like that tired movie that came out about the Vegas showgirls. What was it?
Showgirls?
God. What? You know, every time I want to laugh.
Oh, I watched that, and you know, purely for the titillatory effect. And even I could, after a while, I was like, you know, it ain't worth it.
No, it's not. I mean, Crystal Connors, I mean, that's why she got her leg up on the way to the big stage.
Leg up. You're awful.
I know. But, I mean, that's the whole philosophy. That's what I'm trying to say. I mean, I'm not getting into all the specifics of the CEOs and what they've done and who's in charge of what. I mean, if we can go to Cisco, I mean, who do you think has a lot of shares in Cisco? Ralph Nader.
Really?
Yeah, that's where his, you can ask Andy, that's where his portfolio is.
Son of a gun, had no idea.
Big investor in Cisco Systems, has been. That's where, talk about a businessman. Ralph Nader pays his employees only once a year. only one time a year do they get a paycheck.
You would think that would be violative of the labor laws.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm sure there's somebody out there who, in your audience, who will correct me. But that's what I have been reading, and that's what I've been told by the media. And I'm no friend of Ralph Nader, because I think he has long since lost his usefulness as he has progressed into the corporate ladder of his own situation. You know, everybody's going to get some kind of gig, and they're going to get on that gig, and they're going to make as much money as they possibly can from it.
Well, you know, a long time ago, and I'm proud of the fact, Jim, to the extent that I'm proud of anything, I'm the one who coined the phrase, the religion industry.
Well, yeah, it has become an industry.
And it is an industry. And you know, I've got a story here. You know who Robert Schuller is, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, the Crystal Cathedral.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had more crap about him and his sons and then his family, how they have dissolved ties with one another over whatever was going. But I understand that Robert Schuller drove a Rolls Royce or a Bentley or something like that, and then he had his son and then his daughter, and you know, it's just,
well, you know, there are certain proscriptions on taking suits to the law contained in the remarks of Saul Paul in the New Testament. You know, don't do it, he says. Well, back in 2010, the Crystal Cathedral filed bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped paying Robert and Schuller and his wife, who, of course, are octogenarians now. And the news report that I'm looking at says that the trial started yesterday. The Schullers are suing the church that they started to get their money, and they're willing to leave the people who actually sold goods and services to create it holding the bag.
Are you surprised?
Not in the least.
I mean, I used to watch some of that stuff from the Crystal Cathedral just to see which kinds of gifts they were offering. And, of course, if you subscribed to it, then you, and paid into or contributed, you would receive this gift, this gift, this gift, this gift. And they were talking about how well they were made and what type of filigree would be placed, or not filigree, but whatever, imprimatur would be placed upon the gift, and how pretty it would be here, that, and the other. And I thought to myself, what the fuck's going on here? This is nothing more but a racket.
Well, it is, and to get back to the point that I was making, you know, I coined that term, the religion industry. And it is accurate, I believe, but there are so many other aspects of our society,
yeah, I thought to myself,
that are industries in and of themselves. I mean, there is the so-called pro-life industry. Do you think for 1 minute, Jim, that the so-called pro-life movement, which is an industry, a sub-industry, or a closely held captive? Of the religion industry generally, do you think that the pro-lifers actually ever want to see an end to abortion? Well, they'd
of
have to go out
not.
And find honest work if they did.
Of course not. I mean, why would you want to see your livelihood destroyed? And that's exactly what the pro-life people are to them.
And don't think for a minute that principle does not operate in a number of theaters.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole thing has become a cottage industry as far as, you know, and they're trying to use the beliefs of people. And they use it to their own profit motive and advantage.
And I will say this much. Down on the ground at the grassroots, there may be real live human beings who fall on their knees before their perception of their Creator and pray every night that God will deliver the poor little fetuses from their ends. And they eat it, and they sleep it, and they breathe it, and they can be pretty nasty about it, but they sincerely believe it. And they will go, and when they are told by the people who are making a living off of it to go out and march, they will go out and march, Jim. They'll get themselves arrested. They will put themselves at hazard.
Oh, and there are too many people who belong to that school of thought, Bob.
Right, but understand something. They are being used as shock troops in the culture war by people who are making a very nice living and never see the inside of a jail cell, who direct the action, and when they fall on their knees at night, they say, "Dear God, please don't let anybody ever end abortion. This is a mighty nice life we've got going here."
Well, yeah, of course. It's to their advantage financially and every other way. You know, that's for sure. Absolutely. I mean, there's a... If you look at it very closely, you can... You don't have to look at it very closely at all. But, you know, when you look at the corporate structure, then you realize that these people are absolutely up to their ears in Barbara Cartland novels and Mink. That's for damn sure.
Well, don't forget the occasional copy of the Left Behind series.
Yeah, and I hate to see that happen, and I hate to see what has happened there, because if I may say this, and a lot of people here who are listening to me don't agree with what I'm saying or may not acknowledge it, but today is All Souls Day.
It is that.
And it means more to me than money or profit.
Is today or was it yesterday the day that...
It's All Saints Day yesterday.
Okay, so today is Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah, the 4th or the 5th in Mexico, I think. I think they have a different day there. And I may be mistaken, but I think it's probably the 4th or the 5th. I mean, tomorrow's the 3rd, my birthday, so there, you know.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
We will be polite and gentlemanly around here and not ask which one it is.
Well, that's okay. It's 39. What do you think?
Well, hell, I knew that.
I mean, my God in heaven, you don't ask. You don't ever ask a lady her birthday. I must slap you with my beaded bag.
Just don't whip me with the boa, Jim.
Which color? Pink, red. Like I told you in my email, I was real disappointed. I put out my Red Cross flag and Robert Pattinson didn't come by. But unfortunately, Count Milley did. Count, whatever his name is.
Count Mitchell.
Count Mitchell, yeah, excuse me. He did over the TV. But I just thank God I had a TV to watch and listen to. And
yeah, but I got a whole new image working for me for at least the next few days and thanks to you, of Paul Ryan as Renfield.
Yes, Master.
What an asshole.
Sitting there in Janesville eating bugs.
There you go. There you go. Serving the master and serving the vampire, the psychic vampire, the political vampire, the financial vampire that he has made an entire career of his life being.
And vampires everywhere, Jim.
Well, that's for damn sure. And it's, I don't know.
Oh, by the way, Irish Dave with a little note in for both of us, Jimmy, says, of course, Bob, if Willard wins the election, starting in 2013, it will be called All Latter-day Saints Day.
Oh, that's right. They are the Latter-day Saints, aren't they? I've never quite understood where they obtained that term, why they call themselves that. Of course, why did the Puritans call themselves saints? So
right.
I guess they have a precedent upon which to rely. But like I say, today is All Souls Day, and for myself, I lighted a candle and, you know, simply remembered those who've gone on before.
Well, many of these things, Jim, and that is perfectly valid, many of these things are mnemonics for reminding us to think of the generations that have gone before us. Yesterday just happened to, it would have been my father's 88th birthday.
Right.
And I spent the day thinking about him and how much I would have enjoyed celebrating his 88th birthday with him.
Unfortunately, that did not occur. And there are many birthdays and many, many associations I have with this time of year with friends who are no longer.
By the way, you're getting a confirmation in from Andy. He says, Jim is correct. Ralph Nader had disclosed he was a big investor in Cisco, evidently made some big coin when it was a high flyer years ago. The last few years, however, it's been a dismal investment.
And I'm sure Ralph Nader's gotten out. I mean, my God, the man wore, like, combat boots to work, wouldn't even buy shoes. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, that's, I guess, if you want to wear combat boots to work, that's fine.
Oh, and by the way, the just for everybody's benefit, the West Virginian that Andy was thinking about was Ray Lane, now a managing partner, he says, at Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers. He says he was CFO at Oracle, current chairman of the board at Hewlett-Packard, graduated 1968 from WVU.
Well, you know, the guy's made his way up the corporate ladder.
Yeah, well, you know, the proud sons of Harvard on the Mon do get around.
Yeah, they do. And I don't know if I can congratulate him or condemn him, but what I do condemn him...
He damn sure ain't living under no mountaintop removal site, Jim.
No, he's not. And these people, when they move away and they obtain their own positions of power and, you know, respect and large bank accounts and investments, it has a way of basically dehumanizing them.
Right, and you try to reclaim some of that lost humanity by getting misty-eyed about the hills of home. I think of the lyrics of the state song, Jim. Oh, the hills. I'm not going to sing. Oh, the hills, the beautiful hills. How I love those West Virginia hills. Whether over land or sea I roam, still I think of happy home and my friends above those among those West Virginia hills. And you know what? You do that preferably from a really, really nice joint in Silicon Valley, not from underneath the looming death of a mountaintop removal site.
There it is, and there you have it. And on that note, I'm going to bid you good night, and I wish all of you and those who have left you a blessed awful day.
Indeed, and we have our own to be thinking of. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling in. He, too, weathered Snowmageddon. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, so you are on the air.
I am indeed.
How am I sounding to you?
About okay.
Okay, because I'm on a headphone speaker.
You're a little faint, but don't overdrive it, Kevin.
I can get the phone. Real quick, you were talking. Let me disconnect this here real quick. There we go. And
much better.
Here we go. Yes. You were just talking with Jim about that in the Shores suit. Wasn't that the one where the granddaughter is essentially opposing the Shores or testified against them?
Well, I'm not sure, but I know that she is saying that I think it's the granddaughters versus the daughters and the parents. One of the daughters says that, you know, they've fallen on hard times in the last year. They had to move out of their home in Orange County, California, and they had to sell their second home in Colorado. I mean, Jesus, that's tough, right?
Yeah, tell me about it. You know, the thing is what you were saying is, sure, it, the same thing has happened out here at Focus on the Family.
Well, he was running a $60 million a year hustle, Kevin.
Yeah, I know, but to leave the people that are the ones that helped you build it, so to speak, it's happened out here with Focus, too. They laid off people, you know, and people that worked for them for years, and they gave them...
Yeah, but Dr. Dobson kept getting his check, didn't he?
Exactly. That's my point. And the other thing I wanted to mention to you is you said that... you were talking about the, what's his name? How they were running a racket, Nader and those people eventually get to where it's a racket with the unions and that. You know, to be fair, that
has well, in a capitalist-driven, business-driven society, it should come as a surprise to no one that everything eventually becomes a business.
Exactly. And it happens on the progressive side, too, as well.
Oh, it absolutely does. And I'm trying really hard not to note some very, very obvious examples of where it happens.
You just need to look at your inbox and see how many donation letters you're getting today. And go from there, because while some of those are legitimate donation letters, some of those, you know darn well, from previous campaigns, they're not having any trouble raising money, and I just can't bring.
Well, and it got, but it goes beyond that, Kevin. When I used as an example the pro-life industry,
yep,
and that earnest, if really obnoxious person who falls on his or her knees every night praying for the little unborn fetuses. That person will go out and give of time and energy to the point of risking, you know, their own freedom.
Right, exactly.
And they will be ballyhooed by the higher levels of the organization as struggling for the unborn. But you can take struggling for the unborn and just make that a blank space and fill in just about any damn cause, because all of these causes are driven by the good faith, earnest actions of their grassroots.
Right.
And the grassroots get not a godforsaken penny out of it.
Right.
But the people at the top of the pyramid get very nice salaries, live very nice lives,
yep,
have health care and retirement plans, and they do it all on the backs of people who, to one degree or another, by however, whatever means you use to define the issue, are suffering.
Yep.
To continue with the metaphor that I'm using, or not metaphor, but the example that I'm using, you know, those earnest people in the pro-life movement, they cry real tears.
Yep.
They're hateful, and they're a pain in our rear end. I mean, but I will not take away from them their sincerity at the grassroots level.
Right.
And you know what? If they're so busy praying for the fetuses that they forget to pray not to get cancer, you know what the people who are living the nice lives up the pyramid say? Well, too bad they're gone, but another one will come along.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
And that is, you know, that is a question for a much longer program. That is a question for a topic for a much more serious discussion. And I think it to the extent that on our side, we are the ones, we progressives, we liberals, who say that we really truly value. People, then to the extent that it's happening on our side, we need to identify where it's happening and make it stop.
Exactly. And it means also that you should give thought to who you donate to. For instance, you and Malloy and a few others are struggling to keep it together for the next month. I have no problems donating to you or Malloy because I know that you're in just as, I don't want to use the word desperate, you're basically in the same financial situation I am, and maybe even a little bit worse because I've got health care. So, no problem donating to the Horn or to Mike Malloy or to a couple others out there, but when you get someone who you find out is getting a salary about 8 times more than I am to head up an organization based upon a charity, that's when I dropped out of the organization, because I could not reconcile the fact that most of the people that I know are just struggling to make ends meet while this person wanted like a 15% increase in pay. And I was not going to be part of that. And that organization today they still do charitable things, but you know from being around them, they've lost their real mission. It's all based on keeping the charity going, not on taking care of those that they originally set out to take care of. That's the difference. And so, you know, I would just say to everyone, don't stop donating. Just give thought to who you're donating to. And on that note, you know, I was thinking the other day when that storm hit up there, particularly in Long Island and in that area, Staten Island, there are people called Republicans in this country who are saying to themselves and maybe to others, well, those people who lost everything should have been more careful. And
or those people who stayed should have left. Why didn't they leave?
Right.
And we've got the example of that because it was months, Kevin, that we heard people like Limbaugh day after day, week after week, castigating the people of New Orleans for having the unmitigated temerity to drown because they could not leave home.
Yep, and so it just blows me away that this attitude against, it's not even against the poor no more, it's against the middle class as well. You're not making enough money, but it's your fault, you know? And that may be true in some instances, but in the vast majority of cases, it's not. People are just working to make ends meet. It's not their fault that they can't afford to pay insurance on their house. They don't have the money to pay insurance on their house. And one illness, one major illness, wipes you out. And we know that major illness comes to almost everyone sooner or later.
Well, it's like something Jim just wrote in. He said, these folks will labor like scholars over their own cash cows, but would have snored through the Sermon on the Mount.
Exactly. That's a good way to put it, Jim. I like that.
Kevin, I want to try to get to the last couple of blinking lights, but it's awfully good to hear from you, and your points are well made and well taken.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. Somewhere out there in some free market institute that has enough money to burn a herd of sopping wet elephants,
yep,
they are coming up with position and policy papers to show how the private sector could save people from these disasters better. And at its very core, Kevin, that is because they do not, broken record, they do not believe in the concept of popular sovereignty, of self-government, and most importantly, of the concept of we, the people, being the government. Because they are the corporations and the shills and the flacks and the hacks of the corporations, and they believe in corporate governance. And they've pretty well close to won if they haven't actually won. And so things like Tuesday, even though we've got our issues with President Obama, the difference between him and Willard Romney could not, in this moment, be more stark.
Yeah, and it should be well clear to every American, this man wants to privatize FEMA. What do you think would happen if FEMA were privatized today to those people up there that lost their homes, their livelihoods, everything? We would be a third world country because you would have people who one day were middle class and the next day lost everything, sleeping out on the streets just to survive. And that's when we begin to realize that it is we the people and not they the corporations, I think that's when it's going to change, and I kind of hope that sooner than later.
Well, we don't have a whole lot more later to fool with.
No, we don't. And that's, you know, I'm really kind of nervous about this election, and I feel that tenseness, you know.
Oh, I know. I'm gonna be a wreck, and I will do everything in my power to be sober at showtime on Tuesday.
Are you planning to do anything special like you did back in 08?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. It depends on who wants to play. We'll be sitting up watching returns and stuff. So maybe at midnight I'll go to 9. Rick Smith will do his thing. I'm sure he'll have ongoing coverage. I don't know. Maybe I'll contact him and we'll tag team a little bit or something. And then midnight maybe we'll get all together and see who wants to come and play.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I'll be there.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
Bob, you have a good weekend, and I'm glad to hear you back on the air, and we'll talk to you when I talk to you.
All right. You take care.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Bye, Kevin.
Bye.
Calling from Colorado Springs, that's Kevin. We're going to go right back to the phones in just a moment. I just want to acknowledge some tremendous help we've received this evening. Thanks to Ed, and thanks to Texas Betsy. Thanks earlier in the day to our dear buddy, Thomas. Thanks to Randy, who was the first in on November the 1st. We find ourselves this evening needing only about $30 to meet the evening's fundraising goal. And then there's yesterday. No, I wasn't on the air yesterday, but we count the day. But, you know, we're operating on the $150. Right. So if we're gonna stay up and out of the hole, that's where we are. About $30 finishes the evening, and $150 brings us even for the very young month of November. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the snail mail address. And also thanks to Irish Dave. So that means we are done with today, and $120 to draw even. So there we are. Ray saying he was disappointed. He was hoping it would be like 08. The infrastructure is not the same as it was in 08, but we'll try to have something working. I mean, we'll have 3 hours of anybody's commentary that wants it for election evening, and then we'll see what Rick's up to, and then maybe try to pick something up at midnight, you know, assuming I'm not climbing the freaking walls by then. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
You out there in your battleground swing state?
Yes, indeed, we're that.
Getting a lot of love, I think.
Getting what?
A lot of love, or at least attention from the political machines.
Yeah, Barack was just here yesterday at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And also, Boulder's been getting some attention because NOAA is located there, that National Oceanography and Atmospheric Agency or something like that. Another good government program that the fossil fuel industry wants to shut down because, you know, they're saying forbidden science or science that might interfere with the profit jihad they're on. So, anyway, what else? Oh, and Barack was at our city park here in Denver about a week and a half ago. So, yeah, and we had the convention, actually, the Democratic Convention in 08. I don't know.
Right, I remember that very well.
And that was, it was...
We came very close to actually being there. Just couldn't quite make it work out.
Okay.
But Guy James was there, and Mark Levine was there.
And Amy Goodman.
Yes.
And, yeah, and lots and lots and lots of police. It was intense, and dressed up in the kind of like the RoboCop kind of uniforms.
Right. Oh, I remember the ones with the names blacked out, and she got right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the same Democratic convention where you couldn't swing an umbrella without hitting a Friends of Coal banner somewhere.
Oh yeah, they have these big trucks or buses, you know, Friends of Coal buses driving around town. And, yeah, a lot of that stuff going on for sure. But The Green Party voices, I think I mentioned Jill Stein was here because they held the first debate here at the University of Denver.
Right.
And Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, kind of expanded the debate by having Jill Stein and also Rocky Anderson. He was the former mayor of Salt Lake City, and he's running for president on what's something called the Justice Party. Again, it's, I don't know. A lot of people aren't fans of the third-party approaches, but...
Well, it's not... I mean, look, I've got third-party votes I'm going to be casting on Tuesday.
Cool.
Because I can't tell a difference between Joe Manchin, who supports blowing up mountains and poisoning communities, and a madman like John Racey, who supports blowing up mountains and poisoning communities.
Yeah.
At that point, anything beyond them is a distinction without a difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll be voting for Bob Henry Baber and voting for Jesse Johnson in the governor's race.
I'm wondering, have candidates at that level, I assume there's a difference between them on reproductive autonomy, or do they talk about that much?
Well, no. Joe Manchin goes to every Friend of the Fetuses meeting that he's invited to.
Okay.
Because he is a devout bishop believing Roman Catholic, and John Racey just says that he loves the fetuses a little bit more.
You know, which is kind of sadly ironic. You know, in that they know there again, they know the science behind their industry and how it harms the fetuses. They pretend to be so concerned about.
Well, that's been one of those frustrating things about trying to get through to Senator Manchin. With all of these studies that are just beginning to pile up about what mountaintop removal does to communities, including fetuses in the womb.
Yeah.
Okay? If you really cares about fetuses, you can't be a fan of mountaintop removal. Not when it means that a woman who doesn't smoke but lives near a mountaintop removal site has 181% greater chance of her newborn having breathing birth defects than a woman who smokes like a freaking chimney but doesn't live near mountaintop removal. You can't be a fan of fetuses and be a fan of mountaintop removal.
Yeah. Apparently, I just learned this recently, but apparently people who are on Paxil are advised to stop taking it if they intend to get pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
And there can be some pretty intense withdrawal from that. And my heart goes out to people, you know, who may be on those big pharma stuff. So there's a lot of stuff coming at the fetus. And interestingly, if you look at the Bible, you know, there are groups like, you know, Catholics for Choice and similar groups like that. And apparently the Bible says something about the when does life begin? They thought of it as being at the quickening of the fetus.
And there's talk also of the breath of life. And Texas Betsy was telling me the other night, reminding me that between Judaism and Roman Catholicism, the day is either 30 days or 40 days after the birth.
Interesting. Well,
and again, I think it goes back to the common wisdom of ancient peoples.
Yeah, and they had the wisdom to know if they didn't want to take a birth full term, they had options. They would use herbs and things too.
Oh, there were a number of well-known abortifacients.
Kind of an herbal morning after pills.
Yeah, there were a number of abortifacients that were known in the ancient world. I do want to go back. You mentioned third parties a minute ago, Preston, and I want to make sure that I get this out because I read this and I was profoundly impressed by it. To those who are considering a third party vote in this presidential election, you know, if you're somewhere that you know it's safe, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
But if you're not, some food for thought was provided by Charles Pierce. And I have long been a Charles Pierce fan, but just in the last few days, I mean, he got me over the snowpocalypse here of the last 3 days. I had enough bandwidth I could read his blog posts as they came in. And he posted probably the smartest, most convincing argument for voting in favor of Barack Obama even if you've got an inclination toward third-party voting, that I have yet read. And I think a thinking voter who is really concerned about the exercise of the franchise owes it to him or herself, Preston, to at least go over and read that.
It's Charles Pierce.
Yeah, Charles Pierce at the Esquire Politics blog. You'll probably have to drill down a couple of pages because it's a few days old. But it shows it.
P-E-A?
No, P-I-E-R-C-E.
At Esquire. Okay. I'll check that out.
The man is incredibly smart. He's got a tremendous wit. But in this case, he was laying it out as plainly as he possibly could, and I was profoundly struck by it. I haven't, lest people think, oh, there's that Bob, he's a hypocrite. I have not looked at the poll numbers. I don't know if it's a close race between Madman John Racy and Joe Manchin. I don't know what the poll numbers are between Tomlin and Bill Maloney. But I do know that in that particular case, they both men in both races support the ongoing poisoning of our communities.
Yeah, and there again.
And if there, you know, if beyond those two there was some sort of great big difference, it might make a little bit of a difference to me. But there is not, aside from the fact that John Racy is just crazier than a sprayed roach, there's not a lot of difference between having Joe Manchin in the Senate and John Racy in the Senate. Because Joe Manchin has proven his willingness time and again to stick his finger in Harry Reid's eye and tell Harry Reid to like it.
Yeah. Well, I would say also at the federal level, you know, there's, and it's not about Obama or Romney per se, it's about these much larger institutions around them. And, you know, there's an interesting Jill Stein ad recently on YouTube where, you know, they talk about Hurricane Sandy and climate change, and they have a clip from both of them. Romney saying, I'm a friend of coal. And then Obama saying, we oversaw building enough pipeline that would wrap around the world. Yeah. So, again, there are similarities, important ones, hugely important ones, and differences. So,
the other thing that I would like to draw attention to, I saw something on Facebook the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I must admit it really got under my skin. A picture of a group of little Pakistani girls saying, "I hope we're not on Obama's kill list."
Uh-huh.
I am sickened by the very thought of what we are doing with drones.
Mm-hmm.
I will not stand up for the slaughter of innocents.
Yep.
Because if I'm not willing to stand for the slaughter of innocents where I live, then being 10,000 miles away does not make them any less innocent or their lives any less valuable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be clear about all that. But you know what? Barack Obama doesn't sit there cackling at 3 o'clock in the morning, licking his pencil and writing down little Pakistani girl names on a list that he keeps of people that he wants rubbed out. That is the institutional function of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States of America, and frankly, the Central Intelligence Agency would be doing that, Preston, if Bernie Sanders were president.
Yeah, I agree.
And just for anybody considering it, they'd be doing it if Jill Stein was president. They'd be doing it if Rocky Anderson was president. They'd be doing it if Gary Johnson was president. It is an institutional function of a national, of an international global empire. It is the behavior not of individuals, Preston, but of empire. And I'm not preaching at you, but this is the Friday before, you know, and I want to get that across.
Yeah, so in the context of this global empire, you know, what can we do as individuals? And, you know, we speak our truths and try to act on them as sensibly as, you know, we see we can, and we'll make mistakes and misjudgments and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, what scares me, though, is the mistake, you know, if you live in Alabama, if you live in West Virginia, where Barack Obama does not have a snowball's chance in hell, then vote for Jill.
Yeah.
She's a fine human being. Vote for Rocky. Do what you will. If a whole bunch of Republicans decide that they like Gary Johnson better than Mitt Romney in a place like Alabama, I desperately hope they will vote for Gary Johnson. I'm a big Gary Johnson fan in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Tennessee.
Yeah, and beyond the vote part, there are other ways we can support the things we like about both candidates. It so doesn't have to be an either or.
No. And I go back to something you and I have discussed in the past, Preston. And I didn't mean to just run over top of you there, but I want to sort of reaffirm this. There is a the Constitution of the very United States itself makes third parties very difficult to make viable. Up until John Anderson's run in 1980, the single largest third-party vote-getter was Eugene V. Debs.
Wonderful man. What a legend.
A saint.
Yeah.
But if we're going to build some sort of third-party progressive base, and frankly the right-wingers can go themselves as far as I'm concerned, but if we're going to talk in third-party terms, and then I go back to, and you know, you've pointed out in the past, people who are doing this, get busy. Run for city council. Run for county commissioner. Go do the unglamorous political jobs that make a difference on the ground in real people's lives.
Yeah, and I think no one does more of that than Ralph Nader. And Nader actually is going to be on Book TV tomorrow talking about his most recent book called The 17 Solutions. And to the extent that people want to dismiss it as a gig and his corporate climb up the ladder and whatnot, well, it's a better gig than some others that this society has offered or that people have created. And I wish him every success. And I'm glad he's gotten a lot of investments, because when he won a bunch of money from GM, which was trailing him and trying to destroy his character, he won a $250,000 prize, took that money and founded Public Citizen with it. I hope he grows a corporate empire of public citizens with franchises across the country. It would help us out a lot.
It would. It absolutely would. And I think for another day, perhaps when we've got longer to talk, Preston, you know, maybe we need to also start talking about how we treat the grassroots.
Yes.
Because there is none can hold their hands up, even on the progressive side, and say our hands are clean as clean can be in terms of how the grassroots are treated. I got to get out of here, but I really thank you for the conversation, Preston.
Likewise, Bob.
You have a wonderful evening.
You too, man.
Bye now. The Horns resident optimist, that is Preston calling from Colorado. It's time to get out of here. Thank you all very much. I'm so happy to have been back in the chair this evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for keeping all of this going. Thank you for your conversation, your calls, your emails, everything that makes all of this the special little undertaking that I remain convinced that it is now in its eighth year. I wish tomorrow was Tuesday. It ain't. We'll get together on Monday and just try to keep it together, keep it together, keep it together, keep it together. We'll try to keep it together until Tuesday, and I'll try to sort out maybe what Tuesday is going to be like in the interim as well. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our moderators. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to my darling Agnes for for help with the post every day. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Go to acact.org and learn how you can be a part of the solution to Appalachia's agony. acact.org. Y'all have a wonderful weekend. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.